out again. Is it Free Talk Live?
Dude, where's my car?
It is Free Talk Live.
What if there was, like, this show, man, where, like, anyone could call in and just, like, get on the radio and talk about, like, whatever they wanted to.
And you could, like, freely talk, wow. Too. Maybe it could be live. I'm not sure.
My mind is blown, dude. Like, wow, Scoob. Like, that's just, like, I mean, we're talking, like, hundreds of radio stations, man, right?
Whoa. Dude, far out.
Whoa.
You know, it occurs to me that that's probably why they always got fooled by a guy in a mask. Like, time after time after time. Because, like, you know, every now and again you'd get, you know, Daphne and Fred and all of them in it. But really, it was mostly the stoner and his dog that, like, interacted with the guy in the mask most of the time. That makes more sense.
And this concludes our long-distance dedication. I'm Casey Kasem, the original voice of Shaggy. That's right. Yeah. Casey Kasem, the voice of the weekly top 40 for, I don't know, decades or whatever. Huh. The number one most listened to music radio show for the entire time he hosted it, is the original voice of Shaggy, the biggest stoner Earth has ever known, at least cartoon Earth.
I was going to say, aren't Cheech and Chong probably higher up on the list?
They are, but not in the cartooniverse.
Fair enough, fair enough.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm pretty sure they hit cartoon form at some point, though.
They hit what?
Like, they have been
animated?
I'm almost
certain that at some point Cheech and Chong have been cartoonified.
Oh, I believe so, yes.
Yeah.
I vaguely recall. No, maybe.
But not, that's not the main medium they're known for.
Maybe I was definitely just high, but I do vaguely recall a cartoon with, you know, cartoon caricatures of Cheech and Chong,
right?
Voiced presumably by
Cheech
them,
and Chong.
Right? Either that, or I was just really high. And I was like, man, wouldn't it be cool if, like, Cheech and Chong were cartoonified? Man, imagine the size of the joint they could roll.
Speaking of high, who are we and where are we again?
Oh man.
Why
you gotta ask the deep questions?
Sorry, man.
Well, at least he's not at least he's not asking the two questions that no stoner can answer. You know the two questions that no stoner can answer?
No, man.
Okay, number one, where is the lighter?
Oh man, I think you took it.
Yeah.
And number
that's
two,
the number one response.
What were we talking about 5 minutes ago?
I forget. Those are my two answers. Uh-huh. All the time to that those two questions, regardless of my level of intoxication.
Well, it does just stay in your system, if you do it enough.
All right, so you brought it up. Who are we?
Yeah, this is Free Talk Live.
What do we do here?
We talk freely about liberty stuff and Bitcoin.
And how do we do that?
603-283-6160.
That's one of the ways that you, the listener, can join us. And talk to, actually, that's the only way. I don't really pay attention to, like, the chats and all that kind of stuff while
wasn't
I'm here.
Wasn't there, like,
the
like a zip line or whatever, too?
Yeah,
I think that there one's is exclusively for spies.
Well, like, yeah, you have to be a...
Like TJ spies?
Well, no, that's the only... He's the only one I know that uses it. So we keep one line open for pure espionage.
You have to be a specific type of nerd to use the SIP line. If you understand what SIP telephony is, which is session internet protocol, I believe.
Mm.
If you understand what it is, and then furthermore understand how to use it. That's the part, right? Like, I understand what it is. I kind of understand how to use it. It's just a pain for, like, a regular dude.
I gave it a shot. It's beyond my ken.
It's not. It's just going to take you, like, as a guy who's never done it before, 7 or 8 times to make it go.
I've done it before. It just isn't my preference. I think calling in is a lot easier.
So if you do want to use the SIP line, I believe sip.freetalklive.com is the where you get all that information.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not there, then I don't know, go to freetalklive.com.
Yeah, it's on Free Talk Live for sure.
And look somewhere for SIP, SIP information.
Mm-hmm.
But if you know how to use a regular phone, 603-283-6160. It is Free Talk Live. It is a very special edition of Free Talk Live.
It is.
Hell yeah, man.
For a couple of reasons, too, man. One, yesterday around 8:12 p.m. was the Bitcoin halving, as I like to call it.
Mm-hmm.
The halvening. I've combined having and happening together to make a portmanteau, as I am wont to do. If you're...
That portmanteau is before you made it.
Whatever, it's fine. I'm still using it, the halvening. Right? I pronounce the L in halvening, just like salmon.
Stop, you're killing me.
Rushdie?
No.
That's the only one you're supposed to pronounce the L in.
But it is a special day because of that, but also it's a special day because, well, it's 420, April 20th.
Well, and to be fair, according to London time, which is the official of official times, it was like literally 9 seconds into 420 that the happening occurred.
Oh, according to like Greenwich Mean Time
exactly.
or whatever.
That's
well, I mean, London time is arguably money time.
Right.
Which is what Bitcoin is.
Right.
So
I can't
pretty,
argue
pretty
so I'm
fitting.
Counting it.
Yeah.
Because
well, and,
I can.
And 9 seconds in, right? You said mm-hmm. so. I mean, that seems
I'm
pretty
not even,
deliberate.
Yeah.
I'm
yeah.
not even going to try and be Richie Rich and argue with you for the sake of arguing. Did you hear that, Richie? That's right. I said it. But also, not just because today is the halvening and the 420, but today is also a palindrome. And in fact, so is every day this week.
Ooh.
What's a palindrome?
Palindrome is the same thing forward as it is backwards.
Oh.
Like mom and dad and
oh.
wow. These are the most simple examples. I'll give right. you a complex example.
Race car. Kayak.
No, I said complex.
Oh.
Son, I am able, she said, though you scare me, watch, said I. Beloved, I said, watch me scare you, though, said she, able, am I son. That is a palindrome. If you say those words backwards, if you just read
from
them backwards.
From my palindrome eye of they might be giants.
Yeah. Very good. Very good.
Yeah, I'll give you a historical palindrome. A man, a plan, a canal, Panama.
Oh, nice.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Much more complex.
It sucks that the word palindrome isn't a palindrome.
I know.
It
yeah,
does.
That's a huge
missed
oversight.
Opportunity.
Yeah.
What are
yeah.
these linguists thinking?
Seriously.
Well, they were not cunning linguists.
They are not cunning.
That's for certain.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and then, of course, the dates themselves are palindromes. So, 4202024 is 4202024 backwards, apparently. Yep.
Yeah,
you're looking at me like, is
the
that
dates,
true?
Yeah.
You want to write it down? You want to bust out your magic rectangle and write it down and see if it's true? Go ahead.
Yeah, don't trust verify.
If only there were a device in which you could look up and or write down and or jot down the crazy things that Captain Kickass of Free Talk Live says on a Saturday and verify if they're factual or infactual. Is that even a word?
Infactual? Probably not.
I just made up a new word.
Well,
infactual.
I still would give you more credit than the linguists because you would at least create a word for palindrome that would have been a palindrome.
I'm far
no
more cunning
that.
Than the cunning linguists.
Absolutely.
So you were saying every day this week is a palindrome?
I believe so, yeah.
How does that work?
Well, 0421-2024.
Yeah, all the 2 ones, yeah.
0422024.
No. That doesn't work. No, because like 421-2024, no, 421 won't have a palindrome until 2124.
All right.
Well, wait, no. Do you need the 20, though, and of the 2024?
That's...
I think that might be
yeah,
where
if
we're...
you take out the 20, if you just go 24.
Because that is how some people record time, is like 4/20/24.
Right. If you
right.
do 04/21/24.
Right.
You take out the 20 out
yeah.
of the first.
So you use the apostrophe.
Well...
Back in 24.
I don't know about any fees,
a lot of people
and
do.
I'm not an apostrophe.
Who's
so.
Who has ever called anything in, like, the year 2000 plus by just the last two numbers?
Well, dude, we're in the
like
early...
Everyone has called it, like, 2007, 2010,
no. They
2012,
call it,
2015.
They call it the 10s,
no one calls
call it the 20s.
Oh, in 15. In what? 15 what? I have not heard one person.
No, you call that the tens. Back in the tens.
Yeah.
And then if it's before the tens, back in the aughts They're like 01, 02,
I think they
03,
I think they say in the early 2000s, just to play devil's advocate.
We're 4 years into the 2020s, and people call it the 20s. They're not referring to the 1920s. With the
I have never heard anyone call this the 20s.
Yeah, that's true.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they call it the 2020s.
Everyone who has referred to the 20s has referred to the roaring times.
No, I refer to this as the 20s all the time. And in fact, I like to juxtapose it against the 20s of the previous century. Right? And be like, this isn't the 20s your grandparents were in. this is not the roaring 20s.
These
this
20s will be way more roaring if we just allow for cryptocurrency
to let's not make any mistakes here. These are the compliant, complacent, and obedient 20s.
Mm.
These are not the roaring 20s. There's nothing roaring about this except
Well, we're not
for
even
perhaps...
halfway through yet. Come on.
I mean...
I'm willing to call it.
Really? Already?
Yeah, I'm willing to call it at 2024 that this is not going to be a roaring decade.
What do you think Bitcoin will do to our world in another 4 years? We just had the halving. What do you think is going to happen by the next one?
I mean, that may be the exception to the rule. Right?
Yeah, but
it's the money is the problem.
So the weird thing is though, that like we are still so far away from it really catching on in common culture.
Mm.
Like, it is a pittance of a percentage of people that use this stuff so far.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, ironically, yes. I mean, it does the same sort of a thing, except the right way. Because the reason that the 20s were the roaring 20s is because they had just instituted fiat currency.
Mm.
So the money printers had just been turned on for the first time the Civil War.
When was Prohibition?
2013 or 1913, I think.
And how long did it last is what I'm asking. Like, didn't it parlay into the 20s, and wasn't that part of the reason
just
the 20s
making me use my rectum.
We're roaring. Well, that you have a nice one and a working one now. Like, your screen isn't all, you know, foobarred and spiderwebbed, and when you tap on a thing, it doesn't do the opposite of what you wanted it to do. Like, it's pretty good. You've upgraded your tech, man. Welcome.
Yeah, thanks, Marissa.
Yes, thank you, Marissa. We here at Free Talk Live, thank you.
Sponsored by Marissa.
1920 to 1933.
Oh, there we go. Okay, the Roaring 20s were also like Prohibition. So people were trying to get their party on secretly, right? Mm. This was the dawn, the advent and the, you know, most speakeasies that have ever existed, right? Speakeasies being like these private clubs where you needed to know like a password or like somehow be in.
Mm-hmm.
And then like when you show up to a place, like, are you cool? And they go blah, 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 blah. And you're like, you're not cool. Go away. Right. Or they have some sort of bouncer. Or you said the right thing or you danced the right way, whatever they're. Mm-hmm. You know, thing to get you in the door was, then they'd let you in, and then it would be like, freedom! You can drink, you can smoke, you can gamble, you can do all of the things
And as anyone who is, you know, after their teens knows, there's nothing quite like it being forbidden to make a party awesome.
To make a party.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
Right? Like...
And something to keep in mind, too, about the whole Prohibition thing is that it's not like the government had no involvement in it at all. There was actually a huge amount of corruption involved in it, in which, like, the government officials were using their status to make a ton of money off of it. So it's interesting. Like, I wonder if we're going to get back to that point to where, like, the people with the freedom money just get so rich that they're, like, above the law, because we just, like, you know, because it just becomes impossible to say no. Yeah.
Like I see some of what you're talking about in a slightly different light. I see people who have been attracted to Bitcoin Cash, Dash, Monero, like, all the cryptocurrencies, as, like, people, like, if you've been in it for more than 10 years...
Mm.
You're up.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
You are up.
No, if you've been in it for... Right. At this point, I think if you've been in it for more than 6 months, you're up.
I'm just saying that...
Well, that's not my point. The regular rule is 4 years. Like, even if you had the worst possible timing, you got in at the exact wrong time, if you held for 4 years, you made money.
Right. Mm-hmm. But that's not the end of my point. So people have gotten into it because they were attracted to the freedom... cryptocurrency gives you as a medium of exchange. It's outside of banks. It's outside of governments. It is literally designed to combat all the effects of the government and banking fiasco of the 2008
collapse. Well, I would say it's the freedom that it promised. Because I mean, the thing is,
like, no, it delivers. Like, I can use Monero if I want to do an anonymous transaction. If I don't care about anonymity, I'll use whatever is cheapest or whatever I have the most of or whatever's the lightest to transfer at that particular time.
Well, right, but there's so few people that accept it. I mean, it's more promise than delivery so far.
Well, okay, but like, you know, I'm me and I live in my world.
Mm.
And so I try to do business with as many people as I can that are also into the freedom money. Now, that might mean that I spend some goldbacks on a website or I spend some crypto on a website to buy goldbacks because the person I'm dealing with, they don't do the crypto, but they do the gold or the silver, right? Mm-hmm. Or I might go the opposite way. I might exchange some gold or silver for some crypto because the person I'm doing business with prefers crypto in some way, shape, or form, whatever that is. So I'm willing to transduce whatever into whatever as long as it the currency that I'm transducing into is outside of the banking system and the government system.
Well,
it's not controlled by either one of those.
What you've been saying makes me think of an important thing, which is that the people that use crypto for the freedom reason get richer, and the people that use crypto to get richer also become freer.
They do, but the problem that I'm trying to outline here that I've done unsuccessfully up until this point is that there are some people who are drawn to crypto for the freedom aspects.
Yeah.
Right.
And then they get wealthy.
Right.
And then they change because they've become wealthy. Now, some people don't, right?
Oh, yeah.
But some people do. And I'm not saying it's even like that big of a problem, but I have noticed that there are people on planet Earth who got into crypto, you know, a decade or more ago, that got into it for the philosophical purposes of getting away from the banks, getting away from the governments. It's money of the people, for the people, by the people. It's not controlled by anybody. Government can't shut it down. Banks can't shut it down. All these reasons. But now they've gotten so wealthy that they almost no longer
care
about the like money does buy you freedom,
right?
And this is a fact, and I'm not even trying to bag on the people who've gotten wealthy and like changed, because of course it's going to change you. You have life-changing wealth.
What are you
going to do with it?
Power,
if
too.
If you look back into like the founders of this country, there are plenty of them that knew full well and put it in writing for all of posterity that the purpose of government was to protect the wealthy from the poor. I mean, to this day, there's a bunch of people that think that the only way that we can have property is by using a monopoly of violence to maintain the norm of it.
Yeah, that's not true.
So the fact of the matter is that it does an effective job if you play ball, you know, if you buy politicians like every other super wealthy person, then it absolutely does protect the wealth of those who already have it from those who do not have it yet. Yep. So yeah, there's plenty of people that they get very wealthy, and then all of a sudden, what has been their enemy, their oppressor, is now completely on their side, and then they're like, oh, maybe we shouldn't get rid of this thing.
Yeah, this is why I try to prioritize personally to be as spiritually, mentally, and physically fit as I possibly can at this point in my life when I'm not as well off, because I know that if I prioritize these things now, it'll orient me to have the proper priorities and framework to actually handle wealth and enjoy it and not just let it, you know, consume me. Like, basically, like, having that sort of deliberate intention with life. And I think that that's the problem with a lot of these people, is that, like, they might have thought that they were living life intentionally or deliberately, but there might have been a spiritual deficit, or there might have been a moral deficit, or what have you, that basically like corrupted them as a result of them having all of this increased freedom. So,
yeah, it definitely makes it easier to follow the siren song into statism.
Yeah.
Well, and so this is a question that, you know, I follow, I don't follow many sports, but I do follow the NFL. National Football League, and I don't follow the whole league either. I follow like one or two teams, mainly one, but that's beside the point. My point is, in the NFL, well, and in any of these sports where like
is it a Packers?
Draft, it is. in any of these sports where there's like a draft or whatever, they actually give seminars, coaching. They hire like to like, here's how you handle being rich, right? Or at least here's how you handle being NFL rich. Like even if you're like an undrafted rookie signing for the league minimum,
you still make a good amount of money.
You're still making kick ass money, right? You know. And so they bring in people into their orientation just by nature of being one of these, you know, people who, you know, athletes who, you know, get picked, if you will, to be on the team. They hire these people, these financial consultants, to be like, okay, here's what you don't do.
I mean, yeah, like if you're if all you know is like, you know, football and all of that and that's it. I think it could be super feasible that you just spend all your money on hookers and blow.
Oh, these
kids are
the
like
same
20.
Thing.
You know what I mean?
Oh,
like
yeah.
Getting drafted, you know?
Yeah, the same thing happens to them that happens to everyone who wins the lottery.
Right.
I mean, because you did not earn this money in the way that you will value it enough to protect it, and all of a sudden you have so much money that, like, it blows away all of your previous concepts of what these numbers mean.
Yeah, you're like, wait a minute, you mean I can take my car in to get it fixed before it actually breaks down? Wow, that's weird. I've never experienced that before. Yeah. Wait, you mean I can afford to buy my mom a house of her own? Mm-hmm. And we don't have to live in the apartment anymore with, like, you know, eight other people or what? You know what I mean?
Yeah, right, but money will run away from those who don't take care of it.
Yeah, and the thing is that if you had any flaws in your personality, any addictions, you were probably being kept in check on, you know, whatever addiction.
by not being
able to afford it.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, no. Any vice that you can imagine, you can afford to do as much of it as possible.
A fool and his money are soon parted. I believe that's the
exact quote. I was getting to.
603-283-6160 if you would like to call and comment on whatever we're talking about. If you want to change the subject, that's fine too. It's called Free Talk Live for a reason. Stay right where you are. We've got more Free Talk Live coming at you.
Eleutheromania, the insatiable desire for freedom.
Filibuster, holy stink.
It's the new three-song heavy metal EP from Captain Kickass. Available now on your favorite music app or get it directly from CaptainKickass.com.
Nantucket. Oh, wait, no, wrong.
Rumors about him have been exaggerated. That is all.
It is Free Talk Live. Free Talk Live. If I can spit that out today. Free Talk Live. Saturday. Studio. Me, Captain. You.
Zephin.
You.
Beakless Mountaineer.
It just occurred to me, I don't think we said our names the first time.
No, we didn't.
Oh, man, I totally forgot.
Today, what even is my name? What is a name, anyway?
Today's like a day where people forget things, man.
It's true.
What was I talking about, man?
I don't know. I don't even remember what we were talking about 5 minutes ago, man. Or where my lighter is.
Like, it's not, I had to make sure that I'm not under the influence of marijuana when I do this show. Because when
it is hard to be FCC compliant.
I've had to dump myself a couple of times.
What are you talking about?
Nobody does it. I really don't.
What are you talking about, Captain? I thought that we were all very strictly following federal regulations and laws. I thought that that was our whole thing, was we just
that
followed.
Is a Schedule One substance, and I will not have
there is
you
no medical
about.
Benefit of using a plant like that. What the hell were you thinking, Captain?
Have you met me?
Yeah, you gotta love no medical benefits.
Right, like, seriously. That's what Schedule One means.
It is really close, like really close to having literally all medical benefits.
You know that psilocybin is also Schedule One?
Uh-huh. Don't be psilocybin.
But seriously, like, cannabis reduces your systemic inflammation. So there are circumstances where it messes up your hormones, so the systemic inflammation reduction is not worth the price you're paying. But other than those things, it is literally good for everything, because reducing systemic inflammation reduces a risk factor for every disease and injury that exists.
And on that note, Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. Dash is the cryptocurrency made for spending. Dash transactions are irreversible, so Dash is great for merchants. Plus, its network is protected from 51% attacks by its Chainlocks technology. Thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month for this sponsorship. It's easy to get and easy to use Dash. You can learn more at dash.org. That's dash.org.
Speaking of crypto, I know that it's the halving that just happened.
Halvening.
and it's 420. So I did create a special sermon for this week.
Right.
That kind of combines both of these. So I kind of wanted to read it at the beginning instead of the end to sort of set the stage.
We have a caller on hold, but he'll hopefully stay there. So go ahead.
All right. So this sermon is made in honor of the Holy Sacrament of 420 as well as the Havening. In the Torah, God said in Genesis, in the context of creating the world for man, "See, I give you seed-bearing plant that is upon all the earth, and every tree that has seed-bearing fruit. They shall be yours for food." Genesis 1:29. When God created this holy proclamation to humanity, he was, of course, aware that he had given humanity cannabis, psilocybin, opiates, alcohol, and other plants or plant-derived substances that would change the human consciousness from its default state. Humanity acted on this guideline for nearly all human civilizations, with nearly every culture, empire, and leader taking mind-altering plants given to humanity by God for our use. For example, Marcus Aurelius, a Roman emperor, used opium. Additionally, in ancient Egypt, cannabis was used for medicinal, religious, and cultural purposes. Furthermore, psilocybin was used by the Aztecs, who referred to it as Tenacatl, meaning God's flesh, and it was used in religious and healing rituals. However, in the modern era, the government instituted its unholy war on drugs. This war is against the divine decrees of God and humanity's historical use of substances. The origin of this war on drugs primarily began in America with the institution of racist drug laws. The first anti-opium laws in America were made to target the Chinese. The first anti-cannabis laws were meant to target Mexicans. Finally, according to one of Nixon's top advisors, the war on drugs was meant to target blacks and hippies. Since they were the administration's primary and political enemies and disproportionately used psychedelics, cannabis, and or opiates. For better or for worse, these laws are still on the books because the government is at war with everyone, not just minorities. The government believes that it knows better than God and your God-given conscience that you what you should do with your body and how to shape your consciousness using these plants. More importantly, the government feeds on humanity's disconnection with the divine, and it outlaws anything that would facilitate easier communication with the creator of the universe. Indeed, changing your consciousness from its default state is one of the easiest ways to bring you in direct contact with the creator of the universe and to foster deep spiritual connections. This is something that the modern-day state cannot allow to happen. The government seeks to have a monopoly on purpose, and to have everyone devote their religious and moral energy towards the government rather than towards other human beings and to God. The internet and Bitcoin have actively fought the government from establishing this monopoly and have fought the unholy war on drugs head-on. In 2011, Ross Ulbricht established the Silk Road, an online market on the dark web that allowed for the buying and selling of God-given substances using Bitcoin. In a dark era of the tyrannical war on drugs, the Silk Road shined as a beacon for those who wished to break free from the government-imposed shackles on their consciousness. Because of the Silk Road, there were fewer government-imposed barriers to accessing these substances, less violence from drug deals, and the money used was not the U.S. dollar, the very money used to fund the war on drugs in the first place. In other words, the Silk Road was a holy creation using holy money to fight against the satanic forces of human control and slavery in the world. Ulbricht was sentenced to a double life sentence in prison plus 40-year sentence for fighting on the good side of this holy war. Fitting for someone who committed treason against the Empire's greatest sins. The Empire wanted to set an example to ensure that no one rebelled against it in this particular way. However, Bitcoin and the Internet are uncensorable technologies that will operate without the permission of the Empire. The dark web still brings these plants to humanity in a more open, peaceful, and permissionless manner than the street drug market. It also utilizes Bitcoin and incorporates privacy cryptocurrencies like Monero. So this 420, as you engage in your holy sacraments, do not forget the role that Bitcoin has played in this unholy war instituted by the American Empire. If we use cryptocurrency to end the U.S. government's stranglehold on our money, the Empire does not stand a chance against our power. That's it.
Amen.
Amen.
Well said.
Thanks.
And the only criticism I have there is that I would expand, you know, created and imposed by the American Empire to, like, all empires.
Yeah.
Right? Like, all governments, right? They've all participated in this sort of, like, demonization of the greatest form of currency mankind has ever seen.
Right.
Yeah.
Right? Cryptocurrency in and of itself, like, there's going to be people out there listening, they're like, oh, you're Bitcoin maximalist. No, I use whatever cryptocurrency I need to use to get the thing that I'm trying to accomplish done.
I'm a peace money maximalist.
Yeah. Like, whatever's peaceful and nonviolent and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, like, I might lean towards Bitcoin a bit because, like, that's still the common, there's still the big dog on the block, right? Mm-hmm. It's still the common terminology that most people use that our listeners are going to understand. So, yes, that might
also
be true.
I mean, while the other currencies can be much more effective at things like a lot of the features that you might want to look into, a lot of the decentralized finance, things like that.
You want a cup of coffee, you want microtransactions.
Right, spending. While the other currencies, the other cryptocurrencies are definitely better at those functions, as far as spending, there just is no other game in town, relatively speaking. Like, yeah, the other ones will save your money a lot better. I meant to say saving.
Yeah.
As far as saving, the other ones, yeah, they'll save your money better than dollars, but they just don't hold a candle to BTC.
Right. And
security, too.
And even though, like, at the halving, I've seen a plethora. Anyone?
Plethora.
Of posts from people complaining about the BTC transaction fees, like, at the peak of the halving.
Yeah.
Like, what did you expect
to
happen?
Well, there are people that are doing what I call Bitcoin fireworks, where basically you do a transaction that is one Bitcoin transaction fee.
Yeah.
Like, the whole transaction fee is one Bitcoin, which is like $63,000 or something.
Sure.
And you're actually just sending like 70 cents.
Yeah.
So they set it up that way so that it's like
a firework.
Right,
so they can show you Now, on one hand, I really enjoy this because there's no such thing as bad publicity.
Mm.
True.
Right? So these people who got into Bitcoin for arguably freedom reasons are now going, oh, but I can't buy a cup of coffee. And if I try, the fee is like 30,000 times the cup of coffee or whatever it is. Right. So first of all, the halving happened and it's over. The fees went up and then they came back down. Right, they're not back to where they were, but they're close, right? They're within 10, 20 bucks or something like that per transaction. So, but if you're using BTC as your savings vehicle, you're not going to move it very frequently because you know what it is. You know that it costs more per transaction to move.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, BTC no longer has sort of the crown of being a spendable or a practical spendable currency.
Well, right. And this is how payment solutions sort of are created. There's like the layer one, which is the most secure and strongest layer, and then you have the layer two solution on top of it. And from what I could tell, Lightning works. Like, I'm able to use Lightning where I go. Like,
I've only used it a couple of times, and it's worked. Yeah. I've not had a problem with it. But at the same time, when I've moved BTC, I've never moved so little that I was concerned about the transaction fee.
Right.
Right? So it's always been hundreds of dollars, right? That kind of a thing. It's never been... You know what I mean? It's never been like, oh, I want to send you $10.
Right.
Right. Now, there's plenty of other cryptocurrencies for that. Dash, for example.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I remember.
Yeah, Dash is a fantastic money for currency purposes, for sending especially small amounts without having to pay much.
Right.
And it's really funny how the whole gold silver thing ended up replicating itself in digital money.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, Bitcoin very much does act like gold.
Yeah.
It's heavy. It is an investment if you want to move it, which is exactly like gold.
But that is one secure mother FCC-er.
That's a fact.
Yeah, just like gold.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's put a pin in that, and let's go to, I believe this is Crichton calling from Kentucky. Crichton, you're on Free Talk Live.
Yeah, you're right on the topic that I was calling about.
Sweet.
Yes. Gold, Bitcoin was designed to mimic gold in the currency marketplace. It does a wonderful job of it. But earlier in the night, you guys were discussing the possibility of another Roaring Twenties as a direct result. And I'm here to tell you that is impossible with Bitcoin. And here's why. The main reason that the Roaring Twenties are known for that isn't necessarily prohibition. It's actually the result of the establishment of the Federal Reserve. And the reason is because of, you've ever heard the phrase, the only response to high inflation is high living?
I haven't heard that phrase.
Coined. I'm sorry?
I haven't heard that phrase, but I can see what you would mean with it.
Yeah. Get rid of your money as quick as possible because it doesn't have a lot of value.
Yeah. That
makes sense.
Yeah, and that's very much the world we live in.
Yep.
And that was the world they lived in the 20s, that there was real inflation at the time. And even though they didn't really understand it, they could still inherently sense it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the young people, when they would get their money, they knew that they didn't want to keep it.
Right.
So what do you do when you're young? You blow it.
Right.
Yeah. True.
Well, with the Roaring 1920s, Captain, with the Roaring 20s, a big part of it was that the stock market all of a sudden was open to everybody. And so you have the combination of printing money and all of a sudden ordinary people have access to all this printed money. So, yeah, you had a bunch of especially young people who all of a sudden, they'd made a boatload of money on the stock market. They're not going to put it away for retirement because that's what you do when you're young. You burn through it.
And what happens as a result of this easy access to money? Oh, I don't know. There was this thing called the Great Depression that resulted in there was a prominent term at the time called Hoovervilles. I don't know if you've heard of this, where President Hoover at the time was blamed for all this stuff. And like people were like living in these shanty shacks that they made out of like spare wood. And it was just abysmal living conditions as a result of the fiat system basically destroying people's quality of life.
Yeah, they were the historical equivalent to
tent cities.
And this was right after what is pejoratively referred to as the Gilded Age, what I like to call America's Golden Age, where we didn't have a central bank and there was a relatively free market, at least globally speaking. And this is where you see all of these really famous, really huge mansions being built at the times. Like in Rhode Island, there's these really famous mansions called the Breakers, and they're basically like small castles that were made by these industrialists that were just providing a metric ton of value to people. And then you had quick, easy access to money, and it destroyed all of it.
Crichton?
And Biltmore was built in the same time period. The largest single family residence in the United States, at least. I'm not sure if it's the entire world, but it's enormous.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
a lot of New York City was built during that time, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So what I was trying to point out as far as like the possibility of a new roaring 20s, only this time legitimate. What I'm trying to point out is that, okay, so this entire time for over a century, all of the wealth that that would have been afforded to ordinary people has been stolen. 100% of the wealth of our technology has been stolen from us, and then a little bit more on top of that. And they try to keep that little bit more on top to about 2%, and they'll make sure to push it up if it's under 2%. But if we, when we switch to sound money, we will actually get back all of our wealth of the technological improvements that have happened over the last century. So all of the ordinary people will be legitimately wealthy in the way that they were suddenly wealthy in the 20s.
And the people that have adopted the freedom money and have held it for long enough have already been experiencing these benefits. You look at the cost of a house over time in Bitcoin, and it goes down by more than half. Like, generally, it's by like four times the amount.
Yeah.
In a 4-year span.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're already reaping the benefits. So it's really a matter of who's going to be the quickest to adopt this international usable peace money.
Right.
Well, my objection to that point of view is because during the 20s, one of the main reasons you saw that, and it was called the Roaring 20s, is because the people that earned the money didn't really have a way to save it anymore. And because they lacked that, they saw no better option than just spend it and party. Now, Bitcoin itself is the way to save that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I don't see the same result occurring.
Well, it'll be roaring in a different way. It'll be roaring in that we're able to save and create a ton of innovation as a result.
Well, also there's the fact that there is a really, really heavy bias for younger people to adopt anything digital, right. Including digital money.
Yeah.
Because why wouldn't they, man?
Right.
I mean,
I mean, these are people that are already accustomed to, you know, growing up with, yeah, of course I pay all of my bills through apps.
Yeah.
What kind of company doesn't have an app with auto bill pay?
It's akin to kids not adopting the Atari 2600 in the 80s.
Right.
Right. Why would you not? There's no reason not to. And in fact, cryptocurrency is evolving at such a pace that if you have a child today, like our co-host Nikki has given birth recently.
Oh, yeah. I'm also...
That child will have no use for a regular-ass bank account.
True.
Yeah. Okay.
Because of the evolution of cryptocurrency and the way things are going. Like, they might be like, what's a bank? Oh, you guys still use
right,
a
bank? Yeah.
It'll be like how we
like
laugh.
Like balancing the checkbooks.
We will literally
yeah,
we have
laugh
to explain,
at the grandmother.
Like, once upon a time, the coin that we used had only one node.
Right, yeah. It's like us laughing at the grandmother writing the check in the grocery aisle. Right, we're like, oh my god, this is gonna take forever, right? You get frustrated at that because, well, you've got a debit card now, right? You know,
yeah.
But like, cryptocurrency is just the evolution of all of that,
mm-hmm.
Right? So like, at some point, there's gonna be some young kid laughing at you in the grocery aisle for using your debit card. You're like, how archaic is that? He has
right.
to pull a card out of his wallet and place
right.
it into a slot and wait and enter some sort of PIN code.
Yeah.
When I could just scan a QR code
yeah.
and be done in seconds.
Or you could just tap your phone nowadays too, like right on the thing.
Yeah.
Be like, back in my day, grandkids, the coin we used had a 27 trillion circulation, an unlimited supply cap, only one node, and a quarter of the supply was minted in 6 months, and 1% of the coin holders owned 30% of the entire coin supply.
I was hoping you would actually look that up and bring it up.
You've been spot on with the magic rectangle, Peakless. Well done. Crichton, any final thoughts?
No, that's all I wanted to share.
Hey, brother, thank you for the call. We appreciate you. Feel free to call us again. I want to draw some parallels between cryptocurrency and the speakeasies of the 20s, right? According to Wikipedia, speakeasies were illegal bars selling beer and liquor after paying off local police and government officials.
See?
They became popular in major cities and helped fund large-scale gangster operations, such as those of Lucky Luciano, Al Capone, Meyer Lansky, Bugs Moran, and more. They operated with connections to organized crime and liquor smuggling. While the U.S. federal government agents raided such establishments and arrested many of the small figures and smugglers, they rarely managed to get the big bosses. Now let's take a look at cryptocurrency. Who's getting raided?
Ian Freeman.
I mean this with all love. Ian is one of the biggest nerds I know.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he put together by himself this radio show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, he had help from Mark and that kind of a thing, but like, as far as the tech behind it and all that kind of
Mark was not helpful for the tech side.
No, not at all. Not at all. And so, like, who else are they going after? Ross?
Ross Ulbricht,
right?
Yeah.
They're not going after...
Another small fish, relatively.
Yeah, they're not going after, like, the organized mafias who are doing big deals behind closed doors.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, who's the Ethereum guy?
Oh, Vitalik Buterin.
Yeah, Vitalik's not in prison.
Right.
Even though he probably should... I mean, he should be more than Ian Freeman.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to talk about, like... That is an unregistered security. Like, oh, wow.
Right.
So, like, without Infura, which is a straight-up simple corporation, like, it's incorporated. We know where its building is.
Yep.
Without Infura, there is no Ethereum.
Right.
Like, we've tested this. It has gone down, and then no one can meaningfully transact on Ethereum or any of the chains that are underneath it.
Meanwhile, China bans Bitcoin mining, and it drops by 40% and then immediately bounces back to the highest all-time hash rate a year later.
Right. And so these are the parallels between the prohibition of alcohol and the at least demonization of cryptocurrency, Bitcoin specifically, in the media at least. There are governments that are, you know, doing deals, backroom deals, underground deals with cryptocurrency.
Oh, totally.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, they don't, no one's getting busted for that.
Yeah, Sam Bankman-Fried.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he got busted, but none of the people that he gave money to did. Yeah, right.
Yeah, look at, none of the people he gave political donations to have gotten in trouble or had to give any of it back.
Yeah.
Or, you know, give it to the people that he stole the money from. Like, that's not happening. Yeah, and you're absolutely right. None of the kingpins that were doing the illegal liquor got caught either.
603-283-6160 is the telephone number if you would like to join us on tonight's edition of Free Talk Live. Still to come, changing the way we think about human evolution?
On Free Talk Live, we're bringing people to the ideas of liberty every day. From wrestling superstars like Glenn Jacobs.
You guys really are having an impact, I believe. Like I said, a lot of where I am now is due to listening to Free Talk Live. You changed my mind on some very important issues years ago.
To random people tuning in on the radio.
I was kind of stuck in the left-right paradigm. I heard your show by chance on a Saturday night. From there, I went on, joined the Free State Project, and become an amplifier. So, I mean, that's really the reason why I amp is because I know that if it wasn't for you guys being on as many stations as you are, I never would have found the ideas of liberty.
You can help more people hear the message of liberty by joining Free Talk Live's AMPS program on Patreon for as little as $5 a month. And you'll get access to special perks. Visit amps.freetalklive.com, amps.freetalklive.com.
Free Talk Live.
Got it right in there. Like,
Try to see AI do that.
Yeah, right? I came in on a not one, right? I came in on like a three or something, the 3B, but like it ended where like it was on the one.
Yeah,
you know?
Nice.
So, yeah. And that's called improv, people. Like, that wasn't planned. I wasn't like, oh, guess what I'm going to do next? I'm going to do this thing, right? Also, considering improv.
Why, man? Yeah, because I got high. Because I got high. Because I got high.
That's right. It's a
happy Holy Sacrament Day.
It's a special day for anybody who is a marijuana enthusiast, or even if you're not, but you still believe in freedom and the fact that people own themselves and should never be prosecuted, persecuted, chastised, or otherwise prohibited from putting whatever the hell they want into their own damn bodies.
Yeah, I thought this was America. I thought that you owned yourself, that we abolished slavery, what, like 150 years ago?
Oh, no, no, no. Slavery was not abolished. This is a common misconception. It was just turned from overt slavery, which is taking 100% of your life's effort right from you for the purposes of whoever your master is.
But, Captain, the Constitution says that we abolish slavery.
And now it's just slavery light, where, like, somewhere between 20 and 50% of your life's effort is taken from you involuntarily. But other than that, you're, quote, free, unquote, to, like, make your own job choice.
And it's way more than that.
Whatever plantation you want to live on, you're welcome to go to.
We will let you assign yourself to any part of our plantation almost all of the time. Once a year, we're going to force you to do this thing that you would rather not do. But most of the year, you
like
can
work...
Like
5 days ago?
Yeah, yeah. Well, but most of the year, you can work any part of the plantation you want.
Well, and if you use the slave money, they're taking way more than 20 to 50%.
Yes.
Yeah. There is that.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, you know,
they're taking more than 100%. It's usually like over the course of your lifetime.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like 300, 400, 500%.
Yeah, the money they actually take in via taxation is, I don't even think it's enough right now to pay the interest on on the loans they've taken out from the Federal Reserve. So you are collateral in a banking transaction. If I can't say slavery in any other way, that's it. You are collateral in a banking transaction. Your unborn children, unborn children are collateral in a banking transaction.
And by unborn, we don't just mean like in the womb. We mean not even a twinkle in your parents' eyes unborn.
Yeah. You got a
and their children.
You got a 12 or 13 year old? Yeah, in like 5 years when, you know, they start, oh, they accidentally got pregnant. Well, guess what? That child in debt.
Yeah.
Even before it's born.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard an absolutely perfect term for the circumstance that we're in. Monetary feudalism.
Ooh,
yeah, because
nice.
He was pointing out the whole like
it's going in the notes.
Yeah, the whole capitalism thing, right? And like, well, even though that term was originally from Marx and it was a criticism, it's actually a really good way of putting a pin on exactly what the difference was that had made us wealthy, that had improved human life, was putting a certain amount of our production aside just to make more production. Like, not consuming 100% of what we were producing was why technology went forward.
Yeah.
And what that had been contrasted with originally was just regular old nothing to get excited about feudalism. But what we have now is back into feudalism. Mm-hmm. But instead of serving the king, you just serve the monetary overlords, specifically the people that, A, have the most already, and they are always, B, closest to the money printers.
And when you're used as a piece of leverage for this system, you have to trust that those that control the money printers will do so appropriately. And if you look at all of the value that the U.S. dollar got, which, you know, by no stretch of the imagination would it have been enough to sustain the system, it was mostly by imposing an international tax on other countries through forcing them basically to take our money. But ever since the Russia-Ukraine thing happened, in which we invalidated Russian, bonds or whatever, like all the money that they had in the U.S. system just disappeared, nobody trusts us anymore.
Right.
Like, why would you? Like, if you're our friend or you're our enemy at this point, why would you trust America?
I have a new a term for the Russia-Ukraine thing. Except you got to flip it around. It's the Ukraine-Russia thing. And so if you put it together, it's the Ukrusha.
Oh, nice. Portmanteau of the day.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. I just thought of it just now.
Oh, nice.
You're like, the
more
Russia-Ukraine thing. And I'm like, the Ukrusha. Yeah. That sounds like, it sounds very empirical.
Yeah. Right? Almost sounds like Nukrusha, which, you know, if we continue down this path, is an ever scary increasing possibility.
Well, yeah, let's hope we don't.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I wanted to comment on your sermon there.
Oh, right.
So what it really set me in mind immediately of was that religion throughout time has had sort of a dynamic tension between the dogmatic and visionary elements. Mm. And every religion has gone through this, like, okay, you have someone who enters an altered state.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe it's, oh, well, I saw a ladder climbing up to heaven and right. I saw angels ascending and descending.
Right.
And
or
then,
a burning bush.
Right, right. Yeah. You have this visionary experience, mm-hmm. which is an altered state of consciousness, and you're able to bring back, and this is an important part because plenty of people who experiment with altered substances don't put any focus on bringing something of value back into your ordinary life.
Mm.
And that's tremendously important.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the unfortunate part is that the dogmatic types that are good at encoding the value that you brought back into the ordinary life of people have a tendency to just overdo dogma.
Mm-hmm.
So it moves from the visionary to a nice balanced point, and that's where, like, the best of any given religion is mm-hmm. when it's there's enough dogma so that we don't forget the good lessons,
mm-hmm.
but there's still enough of the visionary impulse to move the thing along.
Mm-hmm.
Before it eventually just gets stagnant
mm-hmm.
and falls into its own excesses.
Right, which leaves a power vacuum for visionaries to step in and fill this purpose vacuum.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And what the established institution cannot stand is another visionary coming
right.
along,
mm-hmm.
which is exactly why the established institutions are telling you, you are not allowed to control your consciousness.
Mm-hmm. I love what you guys are talking about, and we have something to talk about that fits right in.
All right.
With what you guys are talking about.
Sweet.
But before we do so, we've got to, let's go to, I believe this is El Conejo in FEMA Region 13. You're on Free Talk Live.
Hey, guys. For once, I'm not calling in about Monero, Goldbacks, or Javier Milei.
Huh, weird. Okay. So what's on your mind?
So I kind of want to just timestamp an idea across almost 200 radio stations. My major in college was evolutionary biology, and I wanted to throw out this idea about the placebo effect.
Okay.
Because I hear it come up on Free Talk Live quite a bit, especially on nights that I. So, science has established the placebo effect is very real, but it's very hard to ascribe why it is real scientifically.
It is real.
So there's a lot of like. Sorry.
No, go ahead. Sorry.
So there's a lot of like mysticism and woo-woo attached to why it occurs. Especially when I, on nights that I refer to as estrogen talk live, but I think, I think the reason that the placebo effect is real is because looking at genes and gene flow and protection of the whole population from a holistic perspective, if there is a threat to the entire population, gene population, it makes sense that a person would subconsciously or at a genetic level choose to extinguish themselves and give the entire population a buffer zone that allows a pushback on a virus or a fungus or a environmental pressure on the entire population as a whole. Does that make sense?
It does.
I'm not quite following.
Like, It sounds to me like you're describing something that has been found, I'm going to say recently, in the last, I don't know, 20 years, with like mushrooms and other plant life, where like a mushroom or a plant on one part of the planet Earth can experience a thing, and another mushroom or plant somewhere else on planet Earth, hundreds, thousands, millions of miles away, whatever it is, receives that information somehow. We don't know how, right? The mycelium network or whatever it is, right? You know, but like they all get the message, right? And it's my opinion that that's how the placebo effect works. It's sort of a riff on, what's the word I'm thinking of with the viruses? Herd immunity, right? Once you, like with an inoculation that is effective against a virus, once you inoculate a certain portion of your population, whether it's cattle, whether it's humans, whatever it is, all of a sudden the rest of the animals in that population are also now immune. You have achieved herd immunity. Nobody knows why. Nobody can really explain how that transpired, but it does. Am I off base here?
Isn't there an explanation for that? I thought that the explanation was that you make it so that the virus has no one to grab onto, and so it just kind of dies off. Whereas if it did have one person to grab onto, it could sort of foment and cultivate within that person and mutate.
But it's not called like... it's not called disease die-off. It's called herd immunity, meaning if you didn't get the injection, you somehow have become immune to the thing, to the virus.
Well, because there's not enough hosts for it to survive. Like, I think that's why. Like, if there were enough members of the herd that weren't...
I don't see how that is in any way connected
back,
to...
Let's take it back
placebo.
To the plant and the mushrooms, right?
Okay.
They somehow... Like, the placebo effect is when you go for one of these clinical trials, right? And you're like, oh, you've got cancer or something like that. We're trying a new drug, right? We've got 100 people doing this trial. We're giving 50% of you, 50 of you, the actual drug, and the other 50 of you we're giving nothing. Mm. We're giving you a pill that contains nothing, water, sugar, whatever it is, right? Mm. It just contains nothing that's going to heal you whatsoever. And yet, the people who take the pill with nothing, like, see the benefits of the drug.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Right? So how does that happen, right? This is the same thing that happens in, like, the plant life that I was describing, where, like, a plant... has a thing happen to it, and another plant miles, hundreds, thousands of miles away somehow gets that message. How does that happen? These are the unexplained bits of humanity.
Well, you're trying to connect two things that I don't really see have a bunch of connection and just say that because they're unexplained, that's why they're connected. Is that basically where you're getting at?
Yeah, well, like these are definitely mysterious things, but right. I don't see how they're... I definitely don't see them as the same thing.
All right, Crichton?
Well, what I'm saying is that the sugar pill is effective because the person taking it thinks it's effective.
Right.
Whereas believes. If you didn't take more than thinks, believes.
Yeah.
Right, right, believes. What I'm saying is that the person who doesn't think that there's a way to get healthy is essentially there's a overriding species-level shutdown device that protects the entire population or herd. By saying, okay, you think there's a high risk, so we need to shut you down to protect.
Oh,
the rest
okay.
Of the
group. So you're saying that the absence of a placebo effect in some people is the species protecting itself from the belief that there is nothing that can help this? Or am I not hearing you right?
Yeah, I think yes.
Okay.
Why did we pick the weed day to have this conversation?
Right? Wow.
There are people listening to this that are like, I have no idea what the FCC these people are talking about.
Ah, but this is the day they're interested in it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so
who knows? Maybe they understand it better than we do.
So what it sounds to me like you're saying is that, okay, So there's your susceptible to the placebo effect people, and there's your not susceptible to the placebo effect people. So your susceptible to the placebo effect people are like, hey, maybe this will cure my liver cancer. And your not susceptible to the placebo effect people are like, there's no way that this will cure my liver cancer. And that those people dying of their liver cancer is... basically the species protecting itself from the malicious belief that there is no cure for this liver cancer.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's what it sounds to me like you're saying. And if not, then what are you saying?
We might agree. What I'm saying is people who believe they are taking the correct actions to solve the disease, their species level programming, essentially, mm-hmm. if you honestly, truly at your core believe that what you're doing is going to improve your chances for survival, your species level programming won't shut you down prematurely to make sure the disease doesn't spread.
Oh, wow.
In other words, the sugar pill, it's unlocking kind of a baseline like level of risk.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, so if you're taking a sugar pill, you're taking steps to defeat the disease. So they'll get your genetics, your species level genetics will give you a little more tolerance to try to overcome it. But it won't give you that tolerance if you're not taking steps to protect the overall population. It gives you a buffer from the virus or the fungi or the bacteria. Mm. So if the bacteria, fungi, or virus or whatever has a certain kill rate, it'll maybe put a certain percentage below the kill rate to put a buffer for the healthy population to propagate, so that if you start getting sick and you don't take steps to fix it, it'll just terminate you early so that the threat doesn't spread.
Right. It gives you enough time to basically like get you on your feet so that you could take proactive steps to help yourself while not doing the whole thing for you, because that would be like impossible.
Yeah.
Well, but wouldn't that imply that later on you go back into like susceptibility to that disease?
Not necessarily.
So you know, disease X. Yeah, I said it. So disease X comes along, I took a sugar pill. I didn't know I was taking a sugar pill, but it was a sugar pill. And because I have this species level programming, it, like the human organism says, well, at least you're trying something. We'll go ahead and spare you from dying of disease X. But I didn't actually, you know, cure myself of this. I mean, is basically what you're saying. So then wouldn't later on, eventually my body goes, okay, well, we've given you enough space to try and find an actual cure to this thing. Now we'll let it run through its course.
Can I?
I'm saying if you give up, you're triggering an early, like, cutoff.
Oh, that's definitely true.
I see. Okay.
Because there's definitely stories all over the place of, like, when they actually give up is when people die of a given thing.
Well, hey, go ahead.
Kaneo, I just want to say you've been a fun guy. And thanks for the call, man. We appreciate you. Feel free to call us again.
420 Blaze It.
That's right. So I just want to back up a minute, because I am talking about something different, right? You're speaking specifically about like sort of the buffer that Kaneo is alluding to. And then you're saying that like, well, that buffer's got to sort of expire at some point, right? Well, you would think so. I would think so. I think any logical person would be like, well, yeah, that makes sense. But again,
doesn't show that.
Right. That's why I'm saying, like, how do you explain that? You don't. The only way you explain that is through the power of human belief. Now, beliefs can do some really good things for humanity. They can also do some really evil things for humanity, mm-hmm. depending on how they're applied. And
weirdly enough, this ties in perfectly with what you were saying in the sermon and what I was responding with that, because this all has everything to do with human consciousness and human attention,
yeah. Right.
Which at the end of the day, it is the most valuable resource that can ever exist,
mm-hmm.
because through this single resource has come every other resource that we have grown to love and know. because a human being looked at, okay, I want to catch a bunch of fish instead of one fish, and spent enough time looking at that problem, enough conscious attention was paid to this problem, right, that eventually they went, hey, we figured out how to make ropes. What if I make ropes in this mesh pattern and just scoop a bunch of them up?
Yeah. That's the power of human ingenuity.
Right.
Intent. Human intent.
Right.
Right. Somebody was intent. They spent enough time thinking about the problem, mm-hmm, working the problem, that they that their intent was to solve the problem, that they actually like went ahead, put the effort and the time, mm-hmm, in to solve it,
right,
because they intended to do so. Belief works a lot. Similar to, I mean, like, there's belief involved in that scenario, but human belief, like, on a collective level, right, can do some amazing things. There's, mm-hmm, even on an individual level, I remember reading a story, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, maybe longer, about a guy in a hospital. He had some sort of a tumor or whatever, and, like, his wife, like, started bringing him comedy stuff on video, DVD, VCR, whatever it was, right? Started bringing him comedy, Laurel and Hardy and like stand-up comedy and all that kind of stuff. The dude laughed his way into remission.
Wow.
Right?
Amazing.
Because like the drugs weren't working and all that kind of stuff. And his wife was like, well, I know he's a fan of comedy and he loves to laugh, so I'm going to just start bringing him, you know, this stuff so he can watch this stuff while he's in his hospital room awaiting his certain death,
yeah,
right? You know? But no, he like laughed his way into remission,
yeah,
right?
You know what?
And maybe it was cancer, not a tumor. I don't remember exactly what it was. But like he believed, she believed that if he were dying that he should laugh.
Mm.
And he believed enough in the power of laughter that it eventually healed himself.
Mm.
Right?
Maybe.
You see this, you see, well,
maybe laughter is just, okay, the sort of thing that it doesn't require your belief to work.
You guys are familiar with faith healers?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is the power of belief, collective belief in action.
Yeah.
Well, and the power of belief is at the very least exactly what constructs society, and that's why they want to direct your beliefs and your attention instead of letting you direct it.
Precisely.
603-283-6160 is the phone number if you'd like to join us. More Free Talk Live is coming your way. Stay tuned.
This hour of Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. Dash is the cryptocurrency designed to be used for spending. Tired of the ever-inflating U.S. dollar? You can live your life on Dash instead with some handy websites. Bitrefill.com has been accepting Dash for years and has a ton of big-name retailers and brands including grocers, gas stations, phone refills, Amazon, and even prepaid MasterCards. Plus, many of their gift cards are available at a discount. But what about paying your bills? Spritz.finance can do that, and they can send dollars to your bank account in case you still need those for some reason. Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and is widely available on exchanges, including the decentralized Maya protocol, and in multi-crypto wallets. It's easy to get and use Dash. Start by learning more at Dash.org. Thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month to promote Dash on the air. Visit Dash.org to learn about Dash. Dash.org.
Yes, welcome back. Thank you for tuning in and listening to Free Talk Live.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. We're here, and this is where we are. Where else would we be?
Wait, where was I again?
Here is where we are. And a quick shout-out to Germany for legalizing recreational marijuana use.
Today?
On the 1st of April, as it turns out.
Oh, okay. They should have legalized it today.
Did you say the 1st right? of Vapril?
Vapril. Yep. Adults are allowed to carry up to 25 grams of cannabis and cultivate up to 3 marijuana plants at home.
Wait, nice.
Grams is, what do we call it? The decimal system, right? What's the word for that?
The metric?
The metric system. Yeah. Yes, thank you. So how many, what's the breakdown?
Of like pounds versus
how many grams are in a in an ounce. Wait.
What was that? Our executive producer says it's 28 grams for 1 ounce.
Oh, so just under an ounce.
Yeah, a little under an ounce.
Mm, that seems low.
Well, to just carry around with you.
Yeah, but
also,
like,
it's Germany, man. I mean, they are locked down.
Yeah. Honestly, I'm shocked that Germany legalized it before America did. Well, I mean, yeah, but that should just be more so why they would have a cartel against cannabis. Yeah. Because drinking is such a big part of their culture.
I mean, that's why we can't get legalized cannabis use in New Hampshire.
So, yeah, like, definitely.
But we do. We have legalized cannabis use.
We have decriminalized cannabis use.
Okay. But, like, why do you want it to be state-sponsored?
I don't.
Well,
That's what everybody's asking
for. No, I just want people to be allowed to grow it. That's my big priority.
Yeah, I just want it to be like...
Well, so we don't have decriminalized marijuana.
Well, yeah, you can't grow it, and if you're growing it...
We only have lowest priority prosecution marijuana.
Well, they're going to assume that if you're growing it that you're a dealer, which, honestly, you probably are, because, like, people aren't going to smoke their whole plants.
Yeah, but, dude, if I grow tomatoes, I'm probably not going to
eat all... Challenge accepted.
I'm probably not going to eat all the tomatoes I grow, so I'm going to give some away. I'm going to can some.
I'm not saying it's...
I'm not a tomato dealer.
I'm not saying it's unreasonable. Well, no, they would normally regulate you as a tomato dealer, but they say under a certain threshold that you're not.
Remember, we're talking about the people who literally kick down lemonade stands.
Right.
Yeah, I know.
They would absolutely call you a tomato dealer.
That's what I'm saying. Like there's a whole bunch, which is great. Like, I applaud...
Kicking down lemonade stands.
No. The late libertarians to the weed legalization party, right? But, like, legalization is not the answer, because what you're doing... The commonly accepted term for legalization across the 50 United States is state-sponsored recreational marijuana sales, where the state controls how the stores operate. They control how the distributors get the marijuana. They control how the growers grow the marijuana, right? They control every aspect of it and tax every aspect of it up until the point where you buy it at the store. That is not legalization.
Yeah.
That is state fascism. Right, over something that you should be free to grow, consume, package, repackage, sell, barter, whatever it is.
Like, yeah, we need legalization the way that we have legalized petunias.
Right.
Well, you know why they don't do it in that way, and it's the same reason why they would go after you for selling weed and not go after you for selling tomatoes, and I talked about this in my sermon. Which is basically that they want to have a monopoly on purpose, and they realize that these substances facilitate communication with the divine and with realizing your true purpose and your true self, because it makes you think about these things differently. So they want to have a complete control and stranglehold over these things. They don't want you to just be able to grow something that subverts their power in your backyard. That's ludicrous.
Yeah. Yeah, not just intentional monopoly, right. Like on purpose they have a monopoly, but no, they want absolute control of everyone's purpose for existing.
Yep. Shouldn't the proper libertarian stance on this be abolish all marijuana laws?
Yes.
Not legalize it, let's petition the state to make it so that the state can tax us and so we can finally go down the road to the pot
shop. And there were bills introduced by pro-liberty reps in New Hampshire to just repeal the drug law statutes. Like, that's already been done, unfortunately. But I mean, there are liberty people that are doing exactly what you're saying in the state. I haven't seen it done anywhere else, but we're the libertarian homeland.
What I'm seeing is libertarians clamoring for the state to get involved and legalize it like it is in Mass, like it is in Vermont, like it is in Seattle.
I see some libertarians do that, but they're the same libertarians that are like, oh, well, you know, you have to have a monopoly on force to determine what property is. Like, they're basically...
Sounds like I'm not a libertarian.
Well, I mean, yeah.
So I am willing to accept that.
Not going
to
argue there.
Look, they're never going to stop controlling every little thing, but... I am going to be happy the day where they do not care if I grow a plant.
Yeah.
And that has been noticeably absent from almost every bill that has ever come up in New Hampshire.
Hey, hold that thought, because earlier, a couple of segments ago, We were talking about the sip line.
Do we have a sip?
I believe. Jeremy, are you there?
Yes, hello. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. Thanks for calling on the sip line. You sound awesome,
by the
way.
Yeah, you sound sweet.
Mm-hmm. What is on your mind?
I've been running the Free Talk Live TikTok channel, and I called in, a few times several weeks ago.
Well, thank you for your service, first and foremost. We appreciate you.
Thank you. And I've got it from, it started at 215 followers and currently at 7,187.
Nice. Great job.
And we're trying to get to 10,000. Once it's at 10,000, you have to have at least 10,000 to stream something. So I'm going to stream LRN 24/7 on TikTok once we get to 10,000.
Yeah. Nice. Awesome.
So young people can find out about liberty. I don't know if any of you heard Wednesday or Thursday night's show, but I've been calling in as the TikTok correspondent so that keyboard warriors can have their voice heard on air. Someone named Josh has made a suggestion for the Crown of Shame that it should have taxation. I love taxation written on the Crown of Shame.
Oh, jeez.
Wow, ouch. That's horrible. I like it.
I was listening in the last segment when you were talking to Crichton about the placebo, and it made me think, and I haven't had any...
I believe that was El Conejo. Accidentally called him Crichton once. Yeah.
Sorry. Oh, right. Anyway, it made me think that what about the people for whom the medicine doesn't work in the trial? Are they pessimists that think they've gotten the placebo?
Oh, God, I'm so glad that you brought this up, because there's something I wanted to bring up last session that I didn't get to.
All right.
So the COVID vaccine, what the hell is up with that, man? Like, seriously, because
you'll have to be more specific.
Because the world was brainwashed into thinking that this was the one solution that would just make it so that COVID disappeared face of the earth. And yet, people that are vaccinated get it at a higher rate than the unvaccinated. They die from it at a higher rate than the unvaccinated.
Yep.
But they have all of this placebo effect working in their favor.
Yeah, there must be an astonishing amount of, like, just toxic, horrible, I don't know what, in that thing for it to overcome the extreme power of the placebo effect in this circumstance.
Exactly.
Like, how bad for you is this thing that, like... Number one, almost everyone who gets it really believes that it works. Mm-hmm. B, everyone else is at least very heavily encouraged to believe that this thing works.
Yeah.
So, like, in case you're running one of those worldviews where, like, okay, but if no one else believes it, then I just become the crazy guy if I act like I believe it. Well, okay, everyone else has had the maximum amount of propaganda that this thing works. And yet, they're dying.
Right.
And they're getting the disease that they're supposed TikTok. To be inoculated.
Hmm? What's that, Jeremy?
I said, oh, whoops, we've just been banned from TikTok.
Well, that was a good run.
I'm not surprised.
Only kidding.
All right, kid.
I'm one of those. I don't know if I'm in the minority of libertarians. I certainly don't believe in mandates or that anybody should be forced to take it. But I've had the vaccine and I believe in it. And with statistically, you're saying that more people who have had the vaccine have died, but far less people are dying than were dying before the vaccine. So
when you stop including like car accidents and like people that got sick from the flu,
stop paying like $1,000 per death.
Right?
Like,
yeah, you stop incentivizing the hospitals recording every single death as a COVID death. Yeah, it's a shocker. You know, like
you start letting people see their grandparents in the old folks home again, and they have purpose to live now because they can get a hug again.
Yeah. Oh, and people are going outside and like getting fresh air again. Like, yeah. It's so weird that people are all of a sudden healthier.
Yeah. So there's two things that are that I want to point out. Number one, even to start looking at this, you cannot trust what they call a COVID death versus not a COVID death.
Mm-hmm.
You have to start out by looking at all cause mortality to even start to think about this thing. Also, it is the standard life cycle of every virus that it starts out much more destructive, yep, and less transmissible, and it becomes less destructive and more transmissible because the variations that don't kill the host tend to survive better.
Yeah, it's in the virus's best interest to become less deadly over time.
Right.
Definitely good points. It's definitely a correlation and can't prove causation.
But we know the vaccines are harmful. That's like, that's irrefutable.
Yeah, the destruction that those things are causing. I mean, the like masses that they are pulling out of people's circulatory systems of, I mean, apparently.
Yeah,
just,
what's that documentary called?
Oh, Died Suddenly.
Yeah, Died Suddenly. Yeah, definitely check that out. I'd highly recommend that
but,
one.
But if
you
if,
guys know.
If nothing else,
so I'm,
oh, go ahead.
Hi, I'm pro vaccine and pro choice. Everyone has a right to do whatever what they want with their own body. Do you guys know any other libertarians in New Hampshire that are actually pro vaccine, even though they also say everyone can be able to do whatever
Jeremy Kaufman is one. I have another friend who's a bit more private, who's pro vaccine, but
so
he's
Jeremy Kaufman. He doesn't. He definitely doesn't say there should be any mandates or anything.
Yeah,
like
he
that.
Says there shouldn't
he
be any mandates. And he didn't even get the vaccine himself. He just has the position of like, oh, there are more harms to benefits, but like, just in my specific scenario, the harms were not greater than the benefits, so I didn't get it.
Yeah, my beef against the vaccines has always been the mandated part.
Yeah,
me too.
Right? Well, I hate the lies too.
Well, right. Yeah, but
like if they didn't have mandates, but were still lying to us, I would still hate that.
Right, and there's the whole like, oh, you know, government promotion of like Pfizer and Moderna and that kind of stuff. Like, like that's fascism of the highest order.
I hate purely private actors lying too, though.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, honestly, it's like the Nazis. Now their ideology is horrible, but they were a problem because they had power.
Right.
Right.
Right. They used state power against people is why it became a serious issue.
Now, I have some, I don't know, reservations about basically putting biotech in my veins. Right. Unproven, untested, right? All that kind of stuff.
Yeah, to call it a vaccine is a bit of a misnomer.
Right, it's not.
A bit?
Yeah.
It is biotech. Yeah. It is a computer. It is a, I'm trying
to
think
of the platform.
It is a genetic platform. Yeah.
Genetic platform, yes, thank you. That's a good word for it. So, like, I don't care if you took the vaccine. Like, I'm not going to judge you because of that. You took it multiple times. I don't care. What I care about is the government working hand in hand with these corporations to force it on everybody. And as Zephin pointed out, the lies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you have to look at the way that...
I'm 100% with you on that.
And you have to look at the way that this is getting rolled out. So, like, in plenty of circumstances, I would not be upset if this was your one variation. But in this particular case, because they are rolling this out with the intent of creating a global vaccine passport and with it a global central bank digital currency system, it is very obvious that they are attempting to put all of these into a single thing. So the danger of this particular variation cannot be overstated.
Yeah, I haven't seen their desire to put a specific vaccine into food too. Like, it's times like this where I'm super grateful to be a vegan, you know, because I know that none of the food that I'm eating has been injected with the COVID vaccine or whatever. So yeah, it just freaks me out the kind of stuff that they do. But
so you have to stay a vegan even if they make factory produced meat.
Yeah, basically. I mean, yeah, they could totally put spike proteins in that. I don't see why they wouldn't do that if their end goal was to make sure that everyone had spike proteins in their DNA.
And I guess the other thing I should mention is the fact that all of the world's governments, near as I could tell, there's only like 200 governments on planet Earth, and they claim to own all the land. So near as I could tell, all 200 of these bastards decided that it'd be a good idea to lock everybody down in one way or another, nearly bringing on what I like to call a very close encounter with martial law, sans the tanks in the streets.
Yep.
Right.
Weren't there some Nordic countries who didn't really lock down at all?
Sweden.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sweden specifically. And yeah, I'm so grateful that they didn't lock down, because that actually gives us a control.
Right. That gives us data from a place where they didn't. Oh, and guess what? it was relatively
It was fine, yeah. basically. Yeah,
yeah, like anytime
and
that you're performing...
And they're more honest there, too. So they like had actually honest recording practices. I mean, as honest as you can be as a government, but... Like, you know, if we're comparing the U.S. government where people were dying from COVID from car accidents, it's like night and day.
Yeah, anytime you're performing the experiment, and boy, was this an experiment, you need to have a control against which you compare the thing that you're changing. Mm-hmm. And the attempt was made that there be no control throughout the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeremy? For a good reason.
Jeremy?
That's all.
Hey, man, thank you for your service, man.
Yeah,
we appreciate
thanks,
it.
Thanks.
Keep up the good work, man.
And do check out Died Suddenly.
Yes.
It is quite an eye-opener.
Worth your time.
Yeah, and also the VAERS data, V-A-E-R-S, is also pretty eye-opening as far as the people who've been harmed by the vaccine
What's
itself.
The vaccine something?
Something reporting something.
Yeah, vaccine event reporting.
Accidents, events, something like
that. Something like that. Anyway, thanks again for the call, Jeremy. We appreciate you. And thanks again for your work on the TikTok channel.
There we are. Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System.
Adverse event.
Okay. That makes sense.
And that is the reporting mechanism for, it's not, is it state-sponsored? It's individuals can go there.
Yeah.
Doctors can go there, and they can all be like.
It's a platform, and like the estimates say that there's a chronic underreporting of it because it's a fairly extensive application. So like,
and completely voluntary.
Yeah, exactly, and completely voluntary, and not a lot of people know about it. So the fact that the data is so high, which if anyone looks into it, they'll see. Like, just goes to show you how freaking bad this thing is.
Yeah, and it's getting run by the CDC and the FDA, so definitely state-sponsored as can be.
Yeah, and they would have all of the incentive to downplay it as much as possible.
Right.
There's a good band name. S-E-E-D-Y space the letter C.
CDC, nice.
Or even space S-E-E, CDC,
I was gonna say.
Right?
Yeah.
We're CDC.
The last one's my favorite.
The CDC is definitely CD.
Yes, they are. I brought in this thing for show prep today. I'm going to kind of start talking about it. You know, we'll see how far we get into it. This is, it's from MSN, but it says it's also from Newsweek, so I don't know, you figure it out. The headline reads, "Bizarre Finding Changes the Way We Think About Human Evolution." Human evolution might be more bizarre than we once thought, according to a new study. A new study. In the past, scientists believed that hominin evolution was largely driven by changes in climate. We've heard this, right? A bunch of people, climate change is going to climate this, right? But now research from the University of Cambridge has suggested that competition was, in fact, fundamental in hominin evolution.
Yeah. Hominin,
N-I-N.
They're almost homonyms.
Quote, "We have been ignoring the way competition between species has shaped our own evolutionary tree," said lead author Dr. Laura Van Holstein, a University of Cambridge biological anthropologist from Clare College. "The effect of climate on hominin species is only part of the story. Interspecies competition is common amongst most other vertebrates. In any new environment, there's an explosion of species evolution as each species adapts to fill a particular niche. However, once all the niches are filled, competition kicks in, and this explosive evolution flatlines. The pattern we see across many early hominins is similar to all other mammals," Van Holstein said. "Speciation rates increase, then flatline, at which point extinction rates start to increase. This suggests that interspecies competition was a major evolutionary factor. However, when Van Holstein studied the evolution of our own genus, Homo," like Homo sapien, Homo erectus,
that kind we're a bunch of homos,
"things started to get much more peculiar. The more species of Homo there were, the higher rate of speciation," she said. "So when those niches got filled, something drove even more species to emerge. This is almost unparalleled in evolutionary science. In other words, it appears as if competition between different Homo species actually drove the evolution of even more Homo species, a complete reversal of what we would expect to see based on the evolution of most other vertebrates.
Hmm. So the first two things that this makes me think of, the church and Bitcoin, oddly enough.
So what we've been talking about today, yeah, like, so ties into what this article is talking about, yes, which is why I wanted to get to it.
Right. So, like, when the Catholic Church had its, you know, major split, the Catholics and the Protestants,
right,
immediately Protestantism started splitting and splitting and splitting and splitting.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And like, Catholicism had already had a split with Eastern Orthodox. But, like, it was this huge split that caused further and further diversification.
Yeah.
And so that, like, even when the Catholic Church reversed its original thing where you could buy your way out of purgatory, no one went back to it, even though that had been the event that really got people miffed.
Yeah.
And again, Bitcoin, like, as soon as it split into two coins, it very quickly became a whole lot of different coins.
Mm-hmm. Very quickly.
Yeah.
But just like with the church and just like with Bitcoin, when these things happened, it made the bigger institutions stronger,
mm-hmm,
as well as these smaller institutions. There was a bit of a synergistic effect with it where, like, Bitcoin had to become more efficient with what it was given. It had to create Taproot and some of these other technological innovations to keep up with these other coins, and in turn, the other coins had to further improve as, yeah, a result. And the same thing with the Catholic Church. Like you said, they no longer do the practice where they you buy yourself out of purgatory, which it's crazy that that even existed. but the fact that you could just be like, wow, this is BS, I'm not going to partake in this religion that makes me do this crazy stuff,
right,
and become part of this other form of salvation, it was just a total game changer. So,
yeah, and the fractioning of the religions, like, very much mimics the splitting of the cryptocurrencies,
mm-hmm,
right? In the same respect, the forking, that's the term that I'm looking for when it comes to cryptocurrencies. So,
right,
or religion, know, too.
Well, right,
yeah,
religions certainly did
schisming
fork.
Yeah, schisming, right, yeah, schism. That's a better
what
word
else do you get to use the word schism?
Right, because there's all these, like, I think the main religion that I was subject to growing up was some form of Lutheranism. Mm. But then also I attended several different versions of the United Church of Christ.
Mm.
Not of Latter-day Saints, right? But like, right, the Reformed, the Emmanuel United Church of Christ, the Reformed United Church of Christ,
yeah,
like several precursor words that went in front of that that made them slightly different than the other religion that I had attended before them, and the religion before that, and the religion before that. And even Lutheranism came out of Catholicism.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Can you imagine if, while Martin Luther was nailing his 95 thesis, like, he just realized, oh my God, the LDS church is going to be made as a result of this.
603-283-6160. Coming up, how does humans using technology affect evolution? That's right.
Ooh, oh, yeah.
Heavy, man. It's the 420 edition of Free Talk Live. Stay tuned.
Free Talk Live.
Yes, welcome back. Thank you. Edition of
Free
Talk
Live.
Oh, yeah.
You guys are good when I give you the finger.
You should finger us more often, Kevin.
That's probably not going to happen.
Wonder what Gigi's thinking right now.
She's thinking about my clunky, what was it? I can't remember. Something.
Oh, God.
You can't remember.
Clunky and large and clunky hard drive. That's what
yeah, that was it.
Does she think you're RoboCop or something?
What did RoboCop say? He had a catchphrase or something.
I don't know. I haven't seen it.
I forgot, enough. Man.
Yeah.
Oh, well, me too, man. You know what that means? It means...
And I'm high, and I'm
right. I at Home Depot.
Nice.
It's from MJ's Mixes and Mischief.
Why did me saying testicles remind you of that song?
It didn't.
Oh.
Damn it, Zevin. People are off the air for a reason.
Oh, fair enough.
It was like... I was thinking of several things. Oh, it was because, like, that song has balls.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. I tried to find... I luckily have a local copy of this song. It was made by a guy that I know. His name is MJ. He was in a band called Diesel Jenny, J-E-N-N-Y. Mm. But, like, it's obviously short for Diesel Generator, right? It's called High at Home Depot. I tried to find an online, like, you know, place where I could just stream it, play it, you know, that kind of thing. And it's gone. Mm. It used to be on, like, Reverb Nation. It used to be on another site. I'm sure it was on MySpace at some point. Because he's
because
like
all music
age.
Is, in fact, on MySpace.
Well, not all, but a lot. Many of them are, or were, at least.
I'd have to say that getting high at a Home Depot is probably, like, one of the worst ideas you can have.
Oh, no, it's great. Like, one of the best lines in the song is somewhere between, something and plumbing, I fell in love with an orange-vested girl. She showed me four kinds of bandsaws, and now I want to build in her orange-vested world. And I'm like, that's just brilliant.
Yeah, that's sweet and everything, but I'm trying to think of the practical effect of being high in Home Depot.
Have you never been high at Home Depot?
No,
it's
no.
Great. What, right.
That sounds like the most dangerous thing in the world to your bank account.
Yeah, definitely. Like, if you're the kind of person that's into building S, then, like, you're
okay,
gonna...
Look. If you smoke weed and then go to the grocery store for snacks, it's the same effect.
No,
right.
Well, yes, it's the same effect, but food is significantly cheaper than building materials.
It's true.
Unless you build stuff to grow your own food.
That's assuming that you're going to follow through with your stoner plans.
Well, you know.
And let me remind you, the song Because I Got High has gained international notoriety for a reason.
Look, just because you get high doesn't mean you can't be productive.
No, I totally agree with that, but
I just like to point out that there's no material on earth that cannot be turned into a bond with the right motivation. And that motivation is motivation.
All right. Before we go on, I need to say thank you to tonight's amplifier. This is Nathan, who is a gold-level amplifier. What does that mean, to be an amplifier and to be a gold-level amplifier? Well, you can go over to amps.freetalklive.com. It's sort of a Patreon-type setup, and you can donate money to help get this radio show that you're listening to onto more radio stations. We're currently on around 200 radio stations. We could be on more, 250, 300, 350.
420.
420, not out of the question. It's all up to you. If you enjoy this show, the hosts, the co-hosts, the callers, the perspective that we bring of freedom, liberty, prosperity, and that kind of a thing, please consider becoming an amplifier over at amps.freetalklive.com. We only ask for $5 a month. That's the silver level. Nathan gives 10. It means he's at the gold level, so thank you, Nathan, for doubling up on that. We appreciate you. Again, visit amps.freetalklive.com and become an amplifier, please. All right. So we began to talk about this article from Newsweek talking about how human evolution might be more bizarre than we once thought, according to a new study. This study sort of implies or possibly even proves that the more competitive Homo sapiens are, that's us homos. We're all a bunch of homos around here.
Bunch of raging homos. Yeah.
If you're listening, you're a homo. We're all homos. but it seems to say that competition breeds evolution is sort of the TLDR so far. Why is our evolutionary tree so weird, the author asks. Well, according to Van Holstein, that's the person in this study, it probably has something to do with our use of technology. Quote, adoption of stone tools or fire or intensive hunting techniques are extremely flexible behaviors, Van Holstein said.
Mm-hmm.
A species that can harness them can quickly carve out new niches and doesn't have to survive vast tracts of time while evolving new body plans. So our ability to create and use technology allows us to evolve faster than the physical form can, because now we can build things to help protect us, right? All that kind of good stuff.
Well, and I cannot overemphasize the flexibility of using fire.
Yes.
I mean, if you think about all of the things that are now building materials, they did not used to be. But we have a very, very intricate way of using fire, yes. And now we can build with those things.
Right.
Well, and this makes me think of the way that libertarian theory kind of intersects with evolutionary biology, yes. Which is that, like, property is literally an extension of yourself. It is an extension of your ability to improve as a species. Like you said, it's more than just your physical body. You are literally increasing your ability to do more. You are evolving as a result of how you interact with nature, which, you know, is a part of you.
And the competition part brings us back to currency that we've been talking about in the first, the second and third segment mostly.
We talk about it all the time.
Well, and this is why we know, another way that we know that the defining characteristic for original property is where your extension of yourself meets nature.
Mm-hmm.
And where it meets nature and nature becomes transformed, the thing that it becomes transformed into is another extension of you.
Right.
One of my favorite stories is of the Native Americans who would find like a sapling, like a tree. And it's, maybe it's, you know, only 5 feet tall or something. It's not, you know, full grown or anything yet. And what they would do is they would pound a stake into the ground and bend the tree in such a way that it would grow with an arced curve in it. And then at the right time, whenever it was the right size for them or the right angle, they would then chop the tree down and turn that into a bow. Bow and arrow.
Nice.
Right. So, like, that is the ultimate, like, sort of, you're like, okay, here's some nature. I'm going to put some labor into this piece of nature to make it grow in such a way that I can make use out of it later on. I'm going to come back in a year, 2 years. I don't know how long they let these things go before they became, you know, able to be made into a bow for a bow and arrow. But, like, this is what they did.
Yep.
Right? And so that's ingenuity in evolution.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, and it's technology that benefits everyone. Like, the second that the first human found out about fire, like, humanity's destiny just changed, regardless of if you were the one that actually possessed the technology.
Right. Game-changing technology is something that I have missed out on repeatedly in my life.
Well, you won't this time.
Up until cryptocurrency.
Yep.
I was like, oh, I'll be an SOB if I'm going to miss out on this one, because I've seen the curve. I've seen these life-changing technologies. You can go fire. You can go wheel. You can go telegraph.
Yeah.
Telephone, television.
Electricity.
Electricity,
yeah.
Right? You know, the internet,
yeah.
Right? These are like life-changing technologies that are immediately recognizable once they're implemented.
Yeah.
I'd point out glass in a
very
oh,
much
that's
so.
Huge.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you wouldn't have had any of this stuff
without
that.
Yeah, you couldn't have had tubes for your original electronics. You wouldn't have had even something to drink out of, right? Mm-hmm. You know, that
right.
kind of thing. Pressurized sand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Storage.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't underestimate
windows,
that. Food preservation, yeah.
Right, mm-hmm. Getting your sunlight even though it's, you know, freezing cold out.
Oh, yeah, that was a big thing, too.
Oh, yeah.
Saving a lot on building materials because you didn't have to have every single square foot be wood or whatever.
Yeah. This article continues, the ability to use technology allowed our ancestors to compete for space and resources across different niches, which is likely what drove their explosive evolution. The superior tool use may have also contributed to the rise of Homo sapiens and the eventual extinction of all other species of Homo. These results show that, although it has been conventionally ignored, competition played an important role in human evolution overall, Van Holstein said. Perhaps most interestingly, in our own genus, it played a role unlike that across any other vertebrate lineage known so far.
Mm.
So this particular scientist citing of this study says that competition is likely, according to this study, the thing that makes us more human than any other vertebrate on the planet.
And if you look into the big differences of, you know, this versus that species of human, a lot of it really just comes down to how they're going to end up thinking. So like, okay, well, this one's got, you know, a brain that is structured this way. So like this percentage is devoted to the brain, to the neural sequences, or this set of proteins is what they use for those neurological connections. And that ends up in a different way of seeing the world. So, you know, this particular form of hominid will develop this kind of technology because what they're using to observe the world is different. So, like this one will pay attention to, oh, well, when this bird uses this particular kind of root, it actually makes the stone slightly malleable, whereas this other one is just not paying attention to that particular. So this form of hominid figures out how to turn stones into something that you can mold like clay, and this one doesn't, because they're just seeing the world in a fundamentally different way.
And speaking of seeing, going back to things like sand and glass, right, like lenses, right, like that's huge use case for glass, like telescopes, microscopes, reading glasses, contact lenses, right? All this kind of stuff, man. Our ability to see further or smaller or see more than what is, you know, normally perceptible to the human eye is of huge importance.
Let's not forget our magic rectangles.
Right.
And
that's glass.
And the way that we ended up with glass that you could see through was, number one, a huge market. It was Venice.
Yep.
And there is nothing quite like that. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and shout out to one of the better papers written on the subject, Bitcoin is Venice.
Oh, yeah,
that's
a really
good one.
If you
haven't read or heard that one, a secondary shout out to Bitcoin Audible, because I like to listen to my information.
Nice.
If you haven't heard that one or read it, go read that one. It's amazing. But yeah, because you had this free market where all of this technology and information was spreading from this group and that group and that group and this group, and this one would add this chemical to it, and this one would add this chemical, but not this chemical, and they would, oh, well, that got it a little bit clearer. Oh, well, that one got, oh, it's translucent now. Oh, well, it's a little bit closer until we finally figured out the exact special sauce that we needed for total transparency. And without that, I mean, there's none of the electronics that we have. There's none of the television. There's very simply none of the, like, being able to heat your house and kill infectious bacteria on the cheap by having clear glass.
Yeah.
I hate to interrupt you guys, but we are a live call-in radio program. And
fair
thus,
enough.
We're going to go over here. I believe this is David calling. David, you're on Free Talk Live.
Hello. Excuse me. Let me get my speakerphone off, please.
All right. Very well. While we're waiting, we will, I don't know, whistle while we work.
Calling from Jackson, Michigan.
Hey, what's on your mind?
Gosh, a bunch of things. Every time I get you on WKHM in southern Michigan, about 30 miles south of Lansing, probably about 70 miles up to Dearborn, Michigan. But what you mugs do for me is open up my eyes and thoughts of how much is going on.
Well, thank you.
Now, I understand New Hampshire is a pretty cool place.
I'm told Michigan ain't so bad.
Not at all. But I'm on the Jackson's on the I-94 corridor. Runs Detroit, Chicago.
I'm familiar.
And I guess a kind of couple of questions I want some thoughts on. Like I say, Dearborn is like 70 miles. Death to a honorably discharged United States Marine. You're talking to Muggs, and I was a short in the service, but. When they chant death to America, Now, I did live in that area a long time in the shoe business.
Okay.
But, so this death to America kind of rhetoric, can I get thoughts on that?
Oh, so what you're talking about is Dearborn, Michigan, which is famous for having a predominantly Muslim and also predominantly Palestinian population. Is that like sort of the context here? Is a lot of these like anti-Israel, pro-Palestine rallies or whatever?
Yes, and Rasheed.
Oh yeah, Rashida Tlaib. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, she's like one of the worst House members, not just because she's a communist, but also just because she hates Western values and, you know, property rights and wants to establish a system of Sharia law, basically. Yeah. And that's how she got elected, was because she's in that district where Dearborn is.
Yeah, my first thought is, what do you mean by America? Because, I mean, if by America you mean the corporate fascist empire that is putting the entire planet into a monetary fiefdom, then yeah, I'm against that too.
Yeah.
If by America you mean these ideas of individualism and property rights,
right,
well, then that puts us on the opposite side.
Right.
And
well,
there's another definition too, which is both of the continents, North and South America, right, makes everybody in that geographic area an American.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but if you look at what an Islamic communist is trying to do, they're probably trying to get rid of both.
Mm.
Both of those things that you mentioned.
Islamunist.
Nice one.
Two portmanteaus like in the same
Michigan
show.
Nice.
I'm sorry, go ahead, David.
Yeah, I'd just say that Michigan Avenue goes directly through Dearborn, Michigan, and I've taken that route a couple, three or four, many times in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Usually I'd use 94, parallels it. Look down the side street, and it does look like, like Middle Eastern all the time.
I certainly wouldn't want to live there. I'm the kind of person that, very openly identifies as Jewish, and, they don't tend to like my kind in their neighborhood, probably, so.
Sure, and I was just going to say that there was no real problem for 10 years I lived there. I'm 61 now, but now that all this is coming up here recently, and I don't know you guys, you mugs' ages, but gosh darn, I'm a little bit concerned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm concerned.
I'll tell you what, I'm gonna hang up and listen to your thoughts, okay?
Hey, no problem, David. Yeah. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for bringing it up.
Thanks for bringing it up.
Yeah. Thank you for taking it, man.
All right. Have a good day. So I get his sentiment. He's concerned about, the changes that are happening, in a neighborhood that he used to live in. And this is something that many people have to come to grips with. I moved to Seattle, Washington in 1996 at the, we'll sort of say the end of the peak of the grunge era, right? Like all the grunge had already happened and they were all just sort of living off that tidal wave that came in as far as musicians go. But Seattle itself was a very different place in 1996 than it was when I left in 2019, right? And that is to say, like, neighborhoods had been bulldozed and, old music venues or dive bars that we used to go play at, like, were replaced with, either some sort of a business or condominiums and that kind of a thing. The character, if you will, of the city had changed dramatically from a place where it was like hippies and punk rockers to a place where like, oh, it's the new tech hub of the U.S.
I think that what he's describing is a bit more than what would constitute just a normal neighborhood change. Like,
absolutely. I agree with you, but my point is that it happens for many reasons in many different areas, and people resist change, right? Whether it's good change or bad change, right? People just generally resist change once they become of a certain age. Usually when you get, like, for men, it's usually in your mid-30s, right? A lot of men start taking an interest in things like politics once they hit, 30, 35 in that range, right? They don't really take much interest. There's exceptions to these, of course, but, like, generally speaking, the interests of men grow once they get into their, you know, mature age, right? And so they start paying attention to things that they didn't pay attention to before.
Yeah.
And then they go, well, how did this happen?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that something that's important to note about this conversation, though, is that I personally believe, and this doesn't give me a lot of friends in the libertarian community sometimes, but I personally believe that Islam as an ideology is an existential threat to individualism and a lot of the values that libertarianism holds.
Interesting.
The word Islam, if you directly translate it, means submission. So, like, if you look,
meant peace.
No, it does not mean peace. That's salam.
I'd like to point out that there's a huge difference between being in the world that we want to see and the world that exists, where, like, in the world we want to see, if you have, like, okay, this is the Islamic town.
Right.
Great. Yeah. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Awesome. And anyone who wants to be in the Islamic town, they can be in the Islamic town. You can expect that Sharia law will be there, and I can stay out of there if I don't want to. But when we are forced to be together in a democracy is when things become tense.
I know you guys have more to say. I know our listeners are curious to hear. And if they want to call, they could call 603-283-6160. The final half hour of Free Talk Live still to come. It's the Saturday night 420 edition. Stay tuned. It is Free Talk Live. Welcome back. Thank you for tuning in and listening to our program. The telephone number 603-283-6160. In the studio tonight, it's myself, the captain.
Zeffin.
And Peakless Mountaineer.
Is that like the second time all night we've done that?
Probably the second time all night.
Well, if you listen and you don't even know who we totally are, forgot. Come on, man.
Like, wow, man, the host, like, totally forgot.
You know, the thing.
Or something. It's 420, man. I snorted. It's 420. It's the happening. What was the other thing?
Hey, snorting is the wrong one to do.
What do you mean?
Well, no, this is for smoking, not for snorting.
Oh, I inhaled. And it made a sound.
There you go.
I thought that we didn't inhale in honor of our wonderful Lord and Savior, Bill Clinton.
Oh, he didn't. I mean, he did inhale, but he also sucked.
That's true.
So. I don't think he was the one that did the sucking.
Well, he did, but he also received some as well. Free Talk Live is brought to you by ForkFest, happening June 13th through the 16th. At Rogers Campground in the beautiful White Mountains of New Hampshire. ForkFest is a fork of the Porcupine Freedom Festival. ForkFest is decentralized, so there's no ticket cost and no one is in charge. For more information and to connect with other attendees, you can visit the unofficial website, forkfest.party. That's forkfest.party. You guys forking?
He's forking. I wish I could. Yeah.
You're not forking?
No.
No fork for you?
Just pork.
We will fork in your honor.
Well, what constitutes fork? If I come on Sunday, does that count?
Well, see, no one's in charge, so we really don't know.
Well, doesn't fork also technically run concurrently with pork? So I guess I do technically go to fork and pork?
It depends on how you wish to view ForkFest. Since no one's in charge, you can make it whatever you want.
Well, then yes, I'm 100% attending ForkFest.
Some people believe that ForkFest is sort of the, we'll call it the layer two over the Porcupine Freedom Festival.
Yeah.
Right? Where it doesn't matter if you're using the, you know, the layer two, then you are ForkFesting, regardless of what time of year. ForkFest could be year round for all we know.
Fair I'm enough. Actually using the advanced layer three. I am already at SporkFest.
Oh, nice.
Sweet.
I am attending 10 days. Seven of them are what are officially known as the Porcupine Freedom Festival.
Nice.
The 3 days preceding that are what I am calling ForkFest. And Forkfest.party will probably allude to that without with sort of being noncommittal.
Yeah, yeah.
It's whatever you want it to be. You wanna come a week ahead of time? That's Forkfest, man.
Yeah.
You know, there's no one's in charge of it, so there's no organization to charge you a ticket. You just got to pay your camping or your motel fee. That's
nice,
it.
Yeah.
And make of it what you want. You want it to be spectacular? Well, bring and do something spectacular, yep. Right? Like, if you're just going to attend, well, then expect a relaxing camping, mm-hmm. A few days before it gets really busy.
Yeah, yeah, calm before the storm, really.
Yeah.
So, but storm in the best way possible.
Totally.
So, according to the unofficial site, mm-hmm. It is 4 days, not three.
Okay.
Okay. The 13th, 14th, 15th, and 16th.
Again, I just consider every time I go to Rogers to be Forkfest.
Again, I'm going for the 3 days prior and then the 7 days of what is officially called the Porcupine Freedom Festival. Mm. So yeah. To me, that's Forkfest, the whole thing. The 10 days that I'm there, I'm going to be forking around the whole time.
Not to cause too much whiplash here, but I do want to get back to Islam.
I thought you were Jewish.
Fair enough.
I thought no one could go back to Islam.
That's true. No one can. That's actually a big problem with it, is that once you're in it, you can't leave. That's a death sentence right there. So, I mean, like, we're not just seeing what was talked about last segment with Dearborn. We're also seeing Islamic courts being established in Europe and also in Canada and a lot of other places. So they are doing what I suggest libertarians do to be successful, which is to build parallel institutions that people rely on for themselves. But the difference between our ideology and theirs is we want to use these parallel institutions to free people, whereas as far as I'm concerned, is basically Islam is a statist system. Like, their goal is to have a government under an Islamic unified international caliphate,
yeah.
Very similar to communism,
yeah.
But to have it be a religious state.
Yeah.
So basically what our government is, but being way more explicit about it.
No one expects the Spanish Inquisition.
Right, yeah.
Or in this case, the Islamic Inquisition.
Right, yeah, exactly. So it's just something to stay mindful of. I'm not saying that you should be mean to Muslims. A lot of Muslims don't even know that this is the end goal, like, even though their scripture very clearly states what the goal is.
Yeah.
But it is, like, it is something that you have to keep in mind, that this is an inherently imperialist ideology, and it's why it was so successful and has, what, 1.2, 1.3 billion adherents, something like that?
Yeah. It's interesting that you, like, a sub-point of what you just said. I know many people who subscribe to religions, right? They're mm-hmm. like, I'm a this, I'm a that.
Yeah.
You know, I attend this service, or no, that's the day I do the thing, mm-hmm. whatever. And, like, many of them have no idea what their ideology is about.
Yep, totally.
They just go because, like, their parents went, and, oh, yeah, right. As a kid, I had to go to, like, Sunday school or whatever.
Right.
And,
you know. But you still see that donation plate being passed around when they're there. And you know, like, that money sometimes goes to fund some evil S.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes.
Sure,
yeah.
It sure does.
So, just something to keep in mind. Like my worry is that people are going to treat all ideologies the same, because that's what the West tends to do, of like, oh, you know, we're just a hodgepodge of different, like, cultures and identities, and, like, you know, we're a melting pot. And it's like, yes, in a lot of ways that's true, and yes, in a lot of ways there are benefits to that, but there are also ideologies that would seek to exploit that.
Yeah, I can't. Yeah,
and it's 1.9 billion.
Oh,
by the way.
Yeah. See,
yeah, well, that's they're a quarter of the planet.
Yeah. Well, and that's the other thing, too, is that the West is not really pro-natalist anymore. So if we get, oh, and I remember last time, people might not know what that means, pro having babies, basically. And if this is something that the West keeps doing, they're going to import people that don't share their values, which is what's happening in Europe. And once they're here, they have babies more than the people that believe in individualism and property rights do. And then Bob's your uncle. Like, you don't have liberty anymore. And it's not even from the government taking over. It's just a pure babies game. Tyranny can happen with bullets or with babies, you know, well, as Kahana said.
So I'm actually completely in favor of them having their own courts. I just want the same right.
True. Yeah. But I mean, this, it just like the government system, it's not a system that wants to coexist with you. It's a system that wants to dominate you.
Right.
Yeah. That is government in a nutshell, a system that wants to dominate you.
Yeah.
And like people will try to get involved with it with what I'm going to call noble intent. They falsely believe that, you know, oh, if I become a, you know, a cop or, you know, I don't know, some board of directors of the Parks Department or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. They think they're doing some good for their community, for their, you know, their families, their friends, you know, the part of town that they live in, all that kind of stuff. When in fact they are dominating their fellow man with the use of force. And that, I think, is, you know, I don't want to speak for all three of us, but I think we agree that that is what the state is. Yep. It is the use of force. It is dominating you to get you to conform to their will, not yours.
Yeah.
Theirs.
Yeah. And the thing that makes it unique is that no one pushes back against that. Any other organization, if they start using violence and threats of violence, everyone knows that that's wrong. And to some degree or another, everyone will at least withdraw resources from the person being antisocial. Whereas with the organization type known as government, that is what is expected. And if you find out that they are no longer using violence and threats of violence to get their way, is when you think something has gone wrong with government.
No, that's when I think something's, oh, you're no longer going to use force and the threats of violence to make me pay tax?
What did you do, defund the police?
These are good things, in my opinion, in the evolution of humanity. There are some people, of course, who would like to see a revolution, a clash. And depending on how you look at it, like an argument can be made for anyone who does something violent in retaliation is acting in self-defense.
Yeah.
Right. So like, because the government has been dominating you since you were born.
Yeah.
Right. And so if you do act out violently in retaliation, that an argument can be made for that being self-defense. Now,
But some forms of self-defense are more effective than others.
Right. Just because it's not evil doesn't mean it's not stupid.
Yeah.
Well, what
so
about,
if you so.
It's like fight or flight.
Yeah. I have no intention of overthrowing the U.S. federal government.
Right.
I have every intention of underthrowing them.
Yeah.
I'm going to undermine them completely. I'm going to go around them. I'm going to make them obsolete.
My technology is going to eat them alive.
Right. I want human beings to evolve past the idea of slavery.
Yeah, we're not putting the police to death. We're hiring them. That's the plan. We get rich and then we hire them with the explicit instructions of following the non-aggression principle.
Yep. So you mentioned sometimes people do stupid things.
Yeah.
As sort of a message or a way of retaliating. Did you guys hear about this from, I think, Yahoo News? Man who set himself on fire outside Trump's trial reveals shocking motive in his political manifesto.
First I've heard of it.
Yeah, I haven't heard of it.
No, the last time I heard of someone setting themselves on fire, it was over the Gaza-Israel conflict.
Mm. There was a guy in Keene who set himself on fire.
Recently?
No. Some years ago, maybe. It might be like 10 years ago now.
Oh, wow.
But outside of the courthouse, downtown Keene, because the state did something. I can't remember the exact details. I wasn't here for it when it happened, but you can go find it. There used to be a burn mark on the sidewalk outside of the county clerk's building.
That's heavy.
They're in the town circle, also known as the square, even though it's a circle.
Yeah.
That's what government does.
Yeah.
A man set himself on fire.
We'll call something a square when it's really a circle.
That's what government does.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, it's hilarious. I noticed that. They're like, yeah, we're going to have a thing in the Keene Town Square. And I'm like, where's that? They're like, oh, you know where the big circle is? I'm like, yeah, that's the square. And I'm like, no, it isn't. That's the town circle.
How are you going to square that circle?
Anyway, a man set himself on fire outside of the Manhattan courthouse where former President Donald Trump's trial took place. This says today. This is from the 19th, so yesterday. Citing political motives in a manifesto, the individual identified as Max Azzarello is alive but critically injured. I read earlier today that he did die after setting himself on fire. police
witness. Setting yourself on fire isn't generally something you should expect to recover from.
Right. And, like, this guy had a message, and if you read his manifesto, you know, it says a lot of things that, like we say, he's got a, I don't know, I'm not saying he's a libertarian. He probably was not. He was probably more of a conservative Republican type. But there are some things in his manifesto that really ring true.
Yeah. Like what?
Well, police witnessed him douse himself with liquid before igniting. Responders at the scene helped extinguish the fire. Azzarello's pamphlets and social media posts hint at conspiracy theories. Conspiracy theories.
Oh. Oh, so what you're saying is he was right out the get-go.
That's what they're saying.
Oh.
Yes. But officials don't believe he targeted anyone specific. According to reports, the recently emerged manifesto attributed to the man who set himself on fire outside the Lower Manhattan courthouse was purely driven by political motives. He allegedly maintains a Substack page titled The Ponzi Papers, with his latest entry titled I Have Set Myself on Fire Outside the Trump Trial. So, like, he's telling people what he has done or is about to do. In the opening lines, Azzarello declares his extreme act as a means to spotlight a pressing revelation, writing, my name is Max Arezzolo, and I am an investigative researcher who has set himself on fire outside the Trump trial. This extreme act of protest is to draw attention to an urgent and important discovery. We are victims of a totalitarian con, and our government, along with many of their allies, is about to hit us with an apocalyptic fascist world coup. The manifesto includes references to a complex conspiracy involving cryptocurrencies and government collusion, echoing themes from Azzarello's recent social media activity. I hope you know how powerful you are. I wish you a hell of a lot more than luck, he concluded in his lengthy manifesto.
Does it say specifically what he said about crypto?
Yeah, because I can tell you what they are doing. I mean, the central bank digital currency is being combined with vaccine passports. Let's see, what else are they throwing into that thing?
Climate stuff.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Like, there is absolutely a control grid that is being put upon humanity now, and we do have the option to leave if we do it quick enough.
Yep.
He said, just, I haven't read through his manifesto.
You could do control F for crypto if you...
Yeah, cryptocurrency is our first planetary multi-trillion dollar Ponzi scheme, he says. It was expressly created for the purpose by a laundry list of rich and powerful people.
Boy, he really doesn't know about Silicon. Fiat.
Right, yeah. So that's like one of the things I don't agree with him on, right? Like the CBDC now, that is an evil digital currency that is the government's answer to cryptocurrency.
Which will, funnily enough, like funnel people into the good money, because that's the biggest hurdle is, you know, learning the technology. But once you realize it's as simple as, oh, well, the government has a blockchain technology app on my phone, and I can just get a non-government blockchain technology app on my phone.
Some of the other things he says were the March 2023 bank failures were all intentional. The banks were used to move stolen Ponzi money. This signals that they're no longer dumping cash in to keep the government afloat, and that it will soon go insolvent. When
it's already insolvent.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. When the Ponzi
it'll become apparent.
When the Ponzi scheme goes insolvent, it will take down half the stock market with it. Okay.
Yep.
You know,
at least.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The stock market crash that is ahead of us is like nothing we've ever seen. Like, we basically have all of the pieces set up for every single financial crash that America's been through at the same time. The 2008 one, the one in the 70s, the Great Depression,
right,
all at once.
He does continuously reference cryptocurrency and Bitcoin. For example, with this one, the Ponzi scheme goes insolvent, it'll take down half the stock market with it. The perpetrators used their major companies to pipe into the blockchain so they could funnel money out from the crypto exchanges. This includes Google, Tesla, Apple, PayPal, Facebook, Disney, Walmart, Target, InBev, Zoom, and countless others. I disagree.
What's he trying to say?
First of all,
Well, if he were alive, we could ask him.
Yeah.
We could tell him to call.
Well, it's probably in that blog. I'd also just like to quickly point out that they will also put on top of this system your access to the internet.
Mm. Well, first of all, if Google, Tesla, Apple, PayPal, Facebook, Disney, Walmart, Target, InBev, Zoom, and countless others were all into Bitcoin, the price of Bitcoin would be way more than $64,000
that
it is right now. He goes on to say it's a Ponzi scheme so large that it created global inflation. Again, obviously, he knows nothing about economics and the Federal Reserve.
Yeah.
He says, which is why the price of Bitcoin has been a remarkable leading indicator for inflation rates.
It's the sound money's fault that we just get endless money printing.
Oh, man.
Well, to steel man the argument, there is one particular case that's true. And it's because Tether, USDT, is backed in treasuries. And because of that, it has increased the demand for treasuries when all of the other countries are getting rid of theirs. So that's my best argument in favor of what he's saying.
Victims who bought crypto don't realize their money has already been stolen.
That's why we bought crypto.
It's the only money that can be stolen.
Yeah, so when I got my paycheck of the fake money that we're all forced to use and was able to put some of it, you know, dollar cost averaging, put a little bit of it every time you get a paycheck into some cryptocurrency, I have been able to not only retain what I earned, but it's also become worth more in the process.
Wait, are you saying that your crypto can't be confiscated? Why is that, Captain?
I'm not saying that it can't be, but I would have to give up the private keys.
Ah, okay.
But is that even being confiscated at that point?
What is confiscation?
Yeah,
right? By definition, yeah. Right? Like, somebody would have to torture me so badly that I was like, fine, here's the keys, man. You know? Or I would die, and then nobody would win.
Well, no, not nobody. Maybe nobody, but no, the people that own Bitcoin would win.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the fun part, is that even if you torture me to death trying to get my seed phrase, and I refuse to give it to you, not only are you not any richer, everyone who has any Bitcoin is.
The more I read of this, the more I feel like this guy was just sort of scratching the surface. And the first, like, thought that he had was that, oh, my gosh, it's all the, like, the corporations, right, that are, like, using it. It's like, well, you're almost there, bro. But what they are doing, of course, is pointing out that money laundering does occur.
Right.
By large entities like governments, for example, using cryptocurrency.
Yeah. I mean, they do use that as a tool, but what's the tool that they use way more?
The U.S. dollar.
Correct.
Yeah, by far.
Like orders of magnitude.
Right.
Yeah. Like you want to talk about a Ponzi scheme.
In fact, if you want to launder money and all of this stuff using cryptocurrency, you're way more likely to be punished for it vis-a-vis Sam Bankman-Fried.
Yeah, there's a very, like, even from the ordinary perspective where war is a good thing, the percentage of the U.S. dollar that is in nefarious hands is way higher than the percentage of cryptocurrency.
Mm-hmm.
He goes on to say, to better understand our form of government, I will point out to you one of the most astonishing pieces of standalone evidence I've found. Arkansas Governor Bill Clinton's 1988 DNC speech. Telling that we mentioned him earlier.
Yeah, right.
where he nominated Mike Dukakis for president against George H.W. Bush. The speech is a vile, mean-spirited roast of Dukakis's that makes no sense whatsoever. For Clinton to ruthlessly attack a member of his own party should have been political suicide, and repeatedly mocks Dukakis' noble and earnest qualities. Notably, actor Rob Lowe, who was supporting Dukakis, was a victim of a teen sex blackmail operation at the DNC that year. Since we know Clinton is a close associate with teen sex blackmail artist Jeffrey Epstein, we can suddenly make perfect sense of the nonsensical speech by applying this lens. Bill Clinton is a cocky mob boss who blackmailed Mike Dukakis because Dukakis thought his job was to help the public. So this guy's obviously partisan. Right.
Yeah.
You know, he's
yeah. And let's be honest, guys. Bill Clinton's middle management on this thing. Like, the fact that I know his name is how I can tell you he's not at the top.
Yeah. And that's just what the blackmail that they engage in with each other. It's all sex acts with children. Like that's how they blackmail each other.
It's not the only thing.
It's a pretty good bargaining tool that they use very commonly. Yeah, this is where Jeffrey Epstein got a lot of his money.
Yeah, I'm just saying it's not the only network of blackmail. Anything that you can find that is just universally abhorrent, you know, pedophilia, cannibalism. I'm not allowed to say that on the air. Anything that is just absolutely abhorrent.
I mean, even the cremation of care, I think, is blackmail, like, information. But by the way, if people on air don't know what that is, definitely look it up and look up Alex Jones's expose of it. It's really good.
I wanted to mention, you guys know that Bill Clinton was musical. He owned and played a saxophone. And towards the end of his term as president, that saxophone disappeared. And so a hunt went on, and they could never find it, but it's okay. He still had his harmonica. And we're out of time. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. It's been Free Talk Live. If you missed any part of our show, please find the archives over at freetalklive.com under the resources tab. Thank you, Peakless. Thank you, Zeffin.
Blaze it and stack sets.
Thank you to all of our callers and, of course, you, our listeners. We appreciate you. freetalklive.com.
This is Mark Edge with Free Talk Live. Mark Warden with PorcupineRealEstate.com is one of the best real estate agents I've ever worked with. I've been through about 24 real estate transactions in my life, and I feel like I know what I'm doing, but there's always the things that you don't know that you don't know. Mark Warden with PorcupineRealEstate.com found a problem with the house that I was buying that ultimately saved me $65,000. He's a consummate professional, holds his people to his own high standards, and I would unequivocally recommend him for any real estate purchase in New Hampshire. Don't sell yourself short. Contact PorcupineRealEstate.com.